one word will save you 30% site-wide. And this is the last day to do it, December 1st. Orders over $125 unlock a free citrus-flavored 750-milligram CBD tincture. And to celebrate the sale, the folks over at SunsetLakeCBD.com have already made a $5,000 donation to Vermont's food bank. This is a great company. They make a great product. No pesticides. They use integrated pest management. They take care of the land. They practice regenerative farming. They have great business practices, $20 minimum wage when they do the harvest, mostly employee-owned. Otherwise, they have great movement politics. They have donated tens of thousands of dollars, literally tens and tens of thousands of dollars, to things like refugee resettlement, Planned Parenthood, strike relief funds, carceral reform, you name it. They are true believers. They make a great product. Their tincture helps me sleep at night. Their tincture helps my pet relax. The Sunset Lake CBD coffee is a hit in my house on the weekends. I mean, with me, there's really, I mean, it's not like there's a lot of people there.
Right.
But with me, it is. They have smokables. You can mix it in with your own stuff, or you can enjoy a pre-roll after a nice dinner. They have lotions. They have lotions to keep your skin hydrated. They have salves to help your muscles. Just all sorts of great products. Again, 30% site-wide with the code FRIDAY25. And they're going to throw in a free citrus-flavored 750-milligram CBD tincture for any order over $125. Today is it. This is the last day of their sale. See their site for full terms and conditions. We'll put a link in the podcast and YouTube description. Now time for the show.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, December 1st, 2025. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, the Senate to finally review the U.S. extrajudicial killings in the Caribbean. Meanwhile, Alina Habba, Donald Trump's personal attorney, may once again be Donald Trump's personal attorney as she is ruled unlawful as a U.S. attorney in New Jersey. D.C. National Guard's shooter apparently radicalized in wake of his stint in the CIA-backed Afghan fighting unit. Trump pardons ex-Honduran president in massive drug smuggling case and also commutes the sentence of a billion-dollar fraudster who defrauded 10,000 investors in this country.
I have no idea who you're talking about.
Probably true. Meanwhile, U.S. halts all asylum decisions. Trump declares Venezuelan airspace closed as murmurs of a U.S. ground invasion begins. Trump's approval drops to a new low. And a new poll, Americans no longer see four-year college as worth it. Senate Republicans set to argue that U.S. auto safety mandates are just too much.
That's their affordability response.
Mm-hmm. DOJ caves to RealPage, invites future price fixing in the real estate markets. It is World AIDS Day, and the U.S. now refuses to acknowledge it. Lastly, Donald Trump will release his MRI, but he doesn't know what it was for. Oh, all this and more, including tomorrow, big election in Tennessee's 7th.
Yes.
Afton Bain running a long shot race, but...
Not as long of a shot as you might think.
Not as long of a shot as it should have been.
I mean, did you see that they're blasting the airwaves in the district with negative ads about her being a radical, which means they're a little panicked, and AOC is heading down there for a get-out-the-vote event. So that's, I mean, that means it's close. That's what polling has shown.
I want to mention, Emma Vigeland, I hope your Thanksgiving was good.
Yes.
Mine was fine.
Yeah,
okay.
Mine was fine, yeah.
Yeah, we got through that.
Yeah.
All right, so... But I did, when you were mentioning that about AOC, I think if we failed to mention this last week, and this is an important note. You remember when AOC donated money to, I think, Abigail Spanberger's campaign?
Mm-hmm.
That was, I guess, a request from Spanberger. And we should note this, and we should also note that Gavin Newsom had requested AOC's help in the
Prop 50,
and apparently tests that were done on her her ad that she ran showed that hers was significantly more successful in terms of the way that it resonated with people than any other ad there. This is relevant because, you know, we've been noticing for a good year or two that AOC has been trying to play the inside game on some level, which is developing a power base, not just because she's a wildly popular politician, but also creating relationships across the party.
Using her fundraising juggernaut, driven by her popularity, in order to help out Democrats across the country. It's transactional, but it's also politics.
Exactly. So this is just, it's worth noting these three things, that she's being brought down to Tennessee, or is helping out in Virginia, or is the most successful spokesperson in California, because... at the very least, what it shows, people can disagree with whether she should be doing this or not, but it shows at least that what she's been doing has been effective and is working. And whether people want her to gain that type of institutional power or not, I guess, you know, people can have different preferences. But at the very least, we can see it working. And so that is good to see, or at least important to note, I should say. But also, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was fine. We did this already. Let's get it over with.
All right, great. That was great.
It was fine.
Brian,
feels like
Matt?
Divorced parents had a child pickup.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. Let's move on.
Yeah.
Glad. Okay.
We're here to talk politics. We're in this for the love of the game.
Yeah,
I don't know if you know this about this show, but we're passionate about this stuff.
I really wanted to talk about Thanksgiving, but I guess I'll have to hold until
next
year.
We can talk about the football.
Yeah, is there something you have in mind about Thanksgiving you want to get off your chest?
Yeah.
No, I'll save it for next year. I'm sure it'll be the same. So let's get to this. I guess it happened on Wednesday afternoon, 2 o'clock. So we had not noted this on the show as of yet, but two National Guard were shot in D.C. Reminder, a court had found them to be deployed to D.C. illegally, and this was on appeal. They were shot by a, we should say their two names, Sarah Beckstrom, Andrew Wolf. Sarah Beckstrom went on to die. She's, I believe, 20 years old. And she died from her wounds. Both of them were from West Virginia. The shooter, a guy named Ramanullah Lakhanawal, had been brought over from Afghanistan as part of the refugees in the wake of the Taliban taking over in Afghanistan. He was a member of something called the Zero Unit, which was an Afghan militia that was organized, trained to some extent by the CIA. They had a lot of relationships, particularly with the Northern Alliance in Afghanistan, in the wake of the Russian, or I should say the Soviet Union invasion of Afghanistan. And so they had longstanding relationships with a lot of the people in the Northern Alliance. I imagine some poppy growers, et cetera, over the years.
CIA wouldn't know anything about that, right?
I can't imagine. And the suspect was apprehended by other National Guardsmen at the time. He's going to be charged with first degree murder. Wolf is still in the hospital in critical condition. Here is the Trump administration tried to make this about asylum seekers and refugees and the failure of the Biden administration to vet those people coming in. This set of people, and I think we mentioned this in the past, is one of the most vetted of all folks coming in, because you know they have to apply and they're coming from a very specific situation, particularly in the wake of Afghanistan. It was the Trump administration that, it turns out, though, did the vetting on this.
Well, he came in 2021,
terms of like a more permanent, yes.
But the asylum claim was granted earlier this year by the Trump administration.
Correct. And here's Donald Trump being asked about it. This is let's start with number 7.
It's in the early stages, obviously, but do you plan to attend Sarah's funeral?
I haven't thought about it yet, but it certainly is something I could conceive of. I love West Virginia. You know, I won West Virginia by one of the biggest margins of any president anywhere. And it's, you know, these are great people. I love the people of West Virginia. I love the people of our country. But I haven't given it any thought, but it sounds like something I could do. Yeah, it's very raw.
Yeah,
of
course. Yeah, there he is. He's very raw. The emotion, obviously, you can see he's very raw about the emotion.
He's not sure he'll be able to attend because he's going to be so distraught.
I mean, you know, he that part at least was honest. And then the other honest part is I did well in West Virginia. So I would go to her funeral because I did well there. Classic Trump. Here he is, snapping a little bit at the idea that their narrative about who did the vetting for this murderer is falling apart.
The suspect worked very closely with the CIA in Afghanistan for years, that he was vetted, and the vetting came up clean.
He went cuckoo. I mean, he went nuts. And that happens, too. It happens too often with these people. You see him. But look, this is how they come in. This is how they're standing on top of each other in that's an airplane. There was no vetting or anything. They came in unvetted. And we have a lot of others in this country. We're going to get them out. But they go cuckoo. Something
Actually,
happens to them.
Your DOJ IG just reported this year that there was thorough vetting by DHS and by the FBI of these Afghans who were brought into the U.S. So why do you blame the Biden administration
because
for what this
man in.
Did?
Are you stupid? Are you a stupid person? Because they came into on a plane along with thousands of other people that shouldn't be here. And you're just asking questions because you're a stupid person. And there's a law passed that it's almost impossible not to get them out. You can't get them out once they come in. And they came in, and they were unvetted. They were unchecked. There were many of them. And they came in on big planes, and it was disgraceful. And if you look, you'll see there was a law passed. It makes it almost impossible not to let them in, not to certify them, so to speak, once they come in. And they came in. And they shouldn't have come in. And frankly, the whole thing was a mess. The whole Afghanistan situation was a mess. It should have never taken place. If we're going to go out, and we would have gone out because I had everybody ready to go, we were going to go out with strength and dignity and precision. And we would have left from Bagram. And we would have kept Bagram, by the way, because of its very close relationship to China and where they make their missiles. But when you left.
Yeah.
So there's him saying the reason we should have stayed in Bagram is so we could surveil China.
Right.
Again, sometimes he lets out just a little bit of the truth about, like, yeah, our Middle East policy was very much about oil extraction pretty explicitly, and now it's mostly to keep China from getting into our territory.
Show what so we can do over there.
We do defensive things like fund a genocide.
I mean, I would also argue, though, that our war in Iraq was very much about not letting China get the oil. Not just our getting it, but rather, you know, you want to be in charge of the keg, as it were. But so Trump there has gone through the whole list of, incidentally, the very big plane that they came in and they were standing was probably like a C-130,
yeah.
Transport. So it sort of explains why they were rushing out of Afghanistan was because the whole thing was collapsing. It was a deal that Donald Trump had done, but not did not attempt to execute. And the idea that we wouldn't have let these people in is absurd.
Oh, and not only did he not attempt to execute it, he timed it so he would have the opportunity to get out of it so that the deadline would fall if he lost the election under Biden's purview.
Right.
And he punted it, basically. And then, you know, Biden
set
did the
right
thing and did withdraw from Afghanistan, which was our longest running war. And the supposed anti-war president has this critique of that. Also, another female reporter. It's just such a weird coincidence.
And silence,
you can't help but disparaging female reporters like this.
Silence from the rest of the crew, too. Just nobody stands up to say, like, hey, maybe stop calling our colleagues stupid.
They all look stone-faced.
There's nothing stopping somebody from saying, like, screw you. Like, I mean, free speech. Like, I mean, I don't know. Just exactly.
They're not supposed to be kings. We're supposed to live in a republic. Sorry to get all, like, 1776 about this, but we should not, the press should have on some equal footing to the whoever's in charge of the executive. And they shouldn't be able to, like, call up piggies and say, shut up, are you stupid, without the rest of the press having some kind of a response to it.
I just also wanted to note, like, you mentioned that he was a part of this, you know, CIA program for zero unit vets. Rolling Stone had an article that came out this morning where they spoke to some of the people that knew the suspect, basically saying that he had been going through some mental illness issues. He was sad. He was depressed. He had lost his job. He was fired from his job at a laundromat because he lacked a work authorization card despite being approved for asylum and authorized to work by the Trump administration, according to his former unit mate who fought alongside him for more than a decade. He was looking to relocate because he was struggling with the language barrier. But this part was just very sad to hear. About a month ago, Lockenwall told his unit mate that his inability to work due to missing immigration paperwork meant his family couldn't afford rent or food. He resorted to borrowing money from friends and former unit members, and during the conversation, he broke down in tears from frustration and desperation, his unit mate said. Every time, looking for somebody to help for documents, somebody to help pay the rent, he's not going to work, the Afghan unit mate said. His unit mate said Lakhanwal sought help in June from a CIA program designed to aid zero unit veterans with immigration issues. Rolling Stone reviewed a screenshot of the group chat in June where zero unit veterans shared information with a CIA representative about ongoing issues. Lakhanwal posted messages asking for help. His last post went unanswered and was deleted by the chat's administrator. So we basically ruined this guy's life, throwing this young man, and we don't know how young he was when he was recruited into this CIA counterinsurgency effort. And then when he came to this country under asylum, the CIA handler that was assigned to him basically ignored his pleas for help. So that's how the U.S. imperial state treats the people that we use in our different areas of the world for our own interests, even when they need just like basic needs here in the United States.
So, blowback.
Yeah.
We'll have more, obviously, to talk about that in the coming days as that becomes as that shooting ends up becoming an alibi, if you will, or an excuse to send National Guard in other cities.
Christy Noem saying he got radicalized since he's been in America is kind of funny, that a guy who worked for the CIA in Afghanistan was well-adjusted but then came to America, and that's what got him.
Yep. There may be some truth to it, frankly. A couple of words from our sponsor, and then we will talk a little bit about what's going on with these extrajudicial killings that we've been doing in the Caribbean. Finally, somebody found an angle in which they decide to question it. Been going on for weeks and months, and nobody said a word. But I guess it takes a story in the New York Times. Was that what it was? Well, we'll get to that in a minute. A couple of words from our sponsors today. I literally just bought towels from these folks yesterday. It's December. You got the hustle, the bustle. You're going to have to buy presents, et cetera, for me. All I think about really starting in like September is Christmas vacation. Do nothing. Some people like to cozy up and just be present. Well, who deserves a gift that helps them relax? Could be anybody around you right now. Cozy Earth is more than a gift. It's a way to recharge. Cozy Earth, they've got pajamas. They've got joggers that are, they've got all sorts of different types of loungewear that is fantastic. But they also have amazing bedding. I got my sheets. I got my pillowcases from Cozy Earth. They are fantastic. They are temperature regulating. They are incredibly soft and comfortable. And I just bought more towels. I got a mixture. They've got a ribbed towel.
Mm-hmm.
But that's soft, and just a really super soft one. And I got both because Whoa. That's the way I roll. Cozy Earth bamboo sheets are crafted from viscose, which is from bamboo, for a soft feel that helps you keep cozy without overheating. And they have a bubble cuddle blanket. I'm not fully familiar with the bubble cuddle blanket, but it sounds bubbly and cuddly.
Sounds right up your alley.
Yeah.
Actually, I feel like, honestly, I could give this to Saul and I would never hear from him again. He loves stuff like this. It combines comfort and style with its distinctively textured bubble design and ultra soft faux fur feel. Features an extended plush pile and a midweight construction. Perfect for snuggling by the fire, movie nights with family, or adding a touch of luxury to any room. Gift that makes every day feel like a special occasion. And Cozy Earth purchases are risk-free with their 100-night sleep trial. Try them out. If you don't love them, return them hassle-free. 10-year warranty, because once you feel this level of comfort, you're going to want it to last a decade. Thanks to Cozy Earth for sponsoring this episode. Give the gift of everyday luxury this holiday season. Head to CozyEarth.com. Use the code MajorityReport for up to 40% off. I should have waited one day. Just to be sure to place your order by December 12th for guaranteed Christmas delivery. Listening after the 12th, don't worry. Code MajorityReport still works year-round for 20% off. And if you get a post-purchase survey, be sure to mention that you heard about Cozy Earth right here. Give the gift of comfort that lasts beyond the holidays and carries into a cozy new year. Why didn't somebody tell me this was happening? I literally bought the towels yesterday.
Well, because no one knew you were buying towels. Forgot to text us in our work chat about your towel purchases.
All right, let me know before you buy towels.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to be great, but probably forever I'm going to be like, how did I could have got them for 20% less. 40% off. Use the code MajorityReport right now. Emma, do you want to talk about OneSkin?
Oh, yes, I do. I would like to thank OneSkin for sponsoring today's episode. If you are like me, your skin needs some extra care this time of year. Got some cold weather. It's dry out. Got some sun damage, maybe from the summer if you're like me. And I've been relying on OneSkin. I've really felt like it's made a difference, specifically, around just brightness. I have the OS1 face and the OS1 eye, and it's been invaluable in my daily routine. It delivers both powerful skin care and longevity benefits, all in just a few simple steps. You have the OS1 face, which comes in this really cool reusable shell, and then the OS1 eye, which is really revelatory for me because I've had eye creams before that are like tingly or make the skin around my eyes a little bit sensitive because that skin, it requires a different kind of care than the rest of your face. But the OS1 eye has not given me any of those issues, and I've noticed a difference there. At their core is the patented OS1 peptide. It is the first ingredient proven to target senescent cells, the root cause of wrinkles, crepiness, and loss of elasticity, which are all key signs of skin aging. And the results have been validated in 5 different clinical studies. It's also just super easy because you have those 2 products. You know when to use them. To use the phrase Sam likes, bingo, bango, you're good to go. And you know that it's working for you. You just cleanse, pat your skin dry, and you apply twice daily. And it's incredibly easy. As I mentioned, you have that reusable shell, which is great to pack. It's just an easy couple of pumps, and it goes on smoothly and easily. I am going to be giving OneSkin as some gifts this holiday season. I'm not going to say to who yet, because they may be listening, but OneSkin just launched their limited edition holiday set, which includes the Nightly Rewind gift set, which is one of those rare gifts that's both impressive and genuinely useful, providing an upgrade to anyone's nightly routine, featuring their best-selling face moisturizer, their new peptide lip mask, and a cool gua sha tool. Each component of the set is designed to work together as your body enters its natural nightly repair mode, helping renew skin at the cellular level for stronger, smoother, and more resilient skin. This season, don't just moisturize, support your skin at the cellular level with OneSkin. For a limited time, try OneSkin for 15% off using code MAJORITY at oneskin.co/majority. That's 15% off at oneskin.co/majority with code MAJORITY. After you purchase, they will ask you where you heard about them. Please help us out and tell them the Majority Report sent you. Try OneSkin today, and we will put a link down below in the episode and YouTube descriptions and at majority.fm.
Also, final sponsor for the day. This podcast is sponsored by Smalls. I've made great strides with my cat over the past year. You know, we had the 2 cats that passed away.
Yes.
And I got the new cat. New cat and I now, it is, our relationship has developed significantly. Let me just put
it this
way.
That's great to hear.
He comes, he sits on me, he lies on me, he cuddles with me. He's also, like, he's not peeing in the house anymore. He's not pooping. And by in the house, I mean, of course he is. He's a cat. He pees in the kitty litter. But he's peeing in the kitty litter. Am I going to say it's because I've been feeding him smalls? No, I will not say that. But he seems to know. But he seems to know. It finally has registered with him. Oh, okay. You're the guy who gives me the amazing cat food. Have you ever looked at like your cat food thing and said and read the ingredients and half of them you have no idea what they are?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's why you get smalls. Listeners know that for a limited time. For a limited time, you can get 60% off your first order plus free shipping when you head to smalls.com/majority. Smalls cat food, protein-packed recipes made with preservative-free ingredients that you'd find in your fridge. And the easy part, it's delivered right to your door. That's why cats.com named Smalls their best overall cat food. Starting with Smalls is easy. Just share info about your cat's diet, about their health, about their food preferences. Smalls puts together a personalized sampler for your cat. You don't have to pick between random brands at the store. Smalls has the right food to satisfy any cat's craving. My cat loves the bird stuff, like the turkey and the chicken. He loves it in terms of like the, you know, whatever you call it, the wet food. But also he loves the broth. It drives him nuts. And I have to say, with Smalls, I have not seen any hairballs. Seen great energy. He's his weight is perfect. His coat is incredibly soft and shiny, and the litter box, I think, smells less. Like it doesn't like
healthier.
It used to be if the cat took a poop in the litter box, I would know about it immediately, regardless of where I was in the apartment. Now, it takes a little while. Forbes ranked Smalls the best overall cat food. BuzzFeed said my cats went completely ballistic for this stuff. Like I say, Smalls also has a bunch of amazing treats and snacks you can add to your order for the cat. My cat, again, loves the broth that came in our last Smalls order. Well, it's really coming just about all of them now. It's like a little early holiday gift. After switching to Smalls, 88% of cat owners reported overall health improvements. And the team at Smalls is so confident your cat's going to love their product, you can try it risk-free. That means they'll refund you if your cat won't eat their food. What are you waiting for? Give your cat the food they deserve for a limited time, because you're a Majority Report listener. You will get 60% off your first order, plus free shipping, when you head to smalls.com/majority. One last time, that's 60% off your first order. That is closer to free than full price.
Whoa.
60% off your first order plus free shipping when you head to smalls.com/majority. We will put all of this in the YouTube and podcast description. And again, a reminder, if you want the show ad-free, become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Let's go into there was a story in the New York Times. I should say NBC News.
The Hegseth story is Washington Post.
Was it Washington Post?
Yes.
Okay. And it detailed how Hegseth, how the first killing of 11 men in a boat in the Caribbean Sea went down. And apparently Hegseth was just like, kill them all. They fired on this boat. They had determined from afar that they were behaving in a way that one would expect a drug dealer to behave. Now, again, there's no authorization for this whatsoever. This is for the life of me, I don't understand how this is not considered just a war crime or at least a U.S. crime. The president cannot willy-nilly decide we're just going to kill people with no authorization. They shot at the boat. They thought they had killed everyone. Apparently, two men somehow did not die in that first strike. They were hanging on to like shards of the boat. I don't know how else to describe that. And the SEAL Team 6, because that's why we need these guys.
Oh,
the
yeah.
elite of the elite, who are basically just operating a video game that has real-world consequences, then says, well, we were told to eliminate all of them and killed them. And that part, apparently, is what folks in the Senate are starting to hang their hat on, because that is a flagrant war crime. We're not engaged in a war with these people. Not only is there no country associated with these people, there's not even a group associated with these people. Even if we believe the Trump administration that they know who these people are, the only thing that makes them similar is that they're supposedly engaging in the same activity.
Yeah.
The idea that we are, that people, Americans are dying from Venezuelan drugs. What is the percentage of drugs that come into this country? Something like one?
Less than 10%.
Less than 10%. It's just absurd. Here is, you want to say?
Well, no, I mean, let's just let, do you want to do Van Hollen or Mullen first?
Let's start
here?
With Mullen first.
Yeah. You'll hear then this Republican senator try to justify this in this interview with Dana Bash. But on the other side of it, we can talk a little bit about the legal implications of this for Hegseth. I do think it's notable that we're getting reporting about this September strike and who authorized it. These days, just because it's always everybody's fault but Trump's, but the fact that Hegseth is at the top of this is interesting.
Yes, the president and the secretary of war has been very clear they're going to use lethality against our enemies, home and abroad. This has been very clear what's going on right now, that the drug organization that is considered a terrorist organization that is flooding our streets with drugs, is killing Americans every single day, they're being proactive on it. Good on them. Are we doubting that these drug dealers are actually drug dealers? We think they're just out there fishing. Do we doubt that this is a terrorist organization that's killing thousands and thousands of people on our streets? What are we questioning here?
Can you pause it?
I would just say doubting both of those things.
Because one, when he calls it a terrorist organization, has he named, I haven't seen this full interview, the name, the organization that he's accusing these 11 people of part of being a part of?
Also,
that's notable, but
they're
two,
not a terrorist organization.
But two, right, exactly. A terrorist organization is supposed to have a specific classification in that area. And also, you don't just get to murder people extrajudicially if you feel that's the case. It's illegal. What is being reported that Hegseth did is illegal both in international and domestic law, because we have something called the U.S. War Crimes Act, which codified much of the Geneva Conventions into U.S. law, even though, of course, we don't follow it, obviously. But still, you're not allowed to do a no quarter, which effectively translates to no prisoners. So what Hegseth authorized there was a no survivors strike. And then you have to beg, let's go back to what Mullen said there. Do we have any doubt? The fact that he's saying that so aggressively is defending the action, because the action shows that they were afraid that those two survivors would speak and say what they really were doing on that boat, and that they weren't a part of a narco-terrorist organization. That is pretty much Occam's razor, simplest explanation as to why you would kill everybody. Like, he's like freaking, you know, a Batman villain.
There's circumstantial evidence to say that, yeah, that was not a drug smuggling operation. Just the number of people on board, if it was any kind of a trafficking operation, it was probably human trafficking. So what probably happened was you blew up a bunch of people that were being human trafficked at the very best. So well done.
our streets. What are we questioning here? These individuals don't care about the lives of our friends and families. Why do we care if we take them out in international water? It is a war because they've declared war on our streets, and the president and Secretary Hegseth is doing exactly what we should be doing, being proactive against our enemies. And that's what they're doing here. And I applaud them for doing something, because the past administration did absolutely nothing. Why thousands of Americans died on our streets.
Yeah, and I just want to point out that, again, that it's the Republican chair of the Senate Armed Services Committee and the Republican chair of the House Armed Services Committee who say that they want to look at the whole operation, which you just described.
Okay. All right. Whoa. What a follow-up. How about this? The Constitution grants Congress with the authority to declare war. So has Mark Wayne Mullen, as a senator, been a party? Has there been a secret bill that has passed? Has there been some sort of declaration of war that's been formalized that I miss in the headlines? Because you can't just call it a war and say that those strikes are authorized. If it's not a war, it's just straight up murder. If it is a war, it's a war crime based on what I just mentioned. The fact that they did the double tap.
I mean, no one has declared war. They're like, not only do the people in the boats not declare war on the United States has not declared war on people in boats, which is really the only classification that you could do at this point. I mean, we're striking people in boats on both sides of Central America. We're both in the Pacific and in the Caribbean.
Like, I thought Trump loved boats. Remember the boat rally in 2020?
Here is Pete Hegseth, though, bragging. Put that back up. I'm sorry. Oh, no. Pete Hegseth bragging about a kid's book for
Franklin the Turtle.
What's the
significance? Big fan of the franchise.
I think it's the last book Pete ever read. And exactly. It has a lot of meaning for him.
I mean, this is obviously like an AI mock-up parody.
I don't know why
I would imagine
Franklin,
it's not
though.
A real book.
I mean,
thank
at
you.
This point?
Right.
PragerU
has already written the thing up. I mean, I guess. Where is my...
Where's your...
I see it's on the floor really far down there.
Hold on. Do I need to go get it? Yeah.
I mean, this is real.
Yeah.
This guy right here, the wizard right here, he's now our FBI head, just in case you were wondering. But before that, he was an author, and he wrote the book, The Plot Against the King, that he did there. So, and that's what it takes to get made head of the FBI. Here is Chris Van Hollen.
Hopefully,
new next Senate leader.
Senate leader. Oh my goodness! I mean, it seems like it's possible. We'll see.
But here he is speaking to the idea that we're engaging this. And again, this has been going on for months. I don't know why it took this one piece. And it's clear that, like, I think there's a sense that there is other constituencies, whether it's in the military or in the Senate, to get rid of Pete Hegseth. And so anything that focuses this on a decision that Pete Hegseth made makes it, I think, more inviting and attractive for these politicians to jump on.
Not to the Constitution of the United States. So let me ask you about that Washington Post report on the attack on that Venezuelan alleged drug boat. What do you make of what happened there? Do you think there was a war crime committed?
Oh, I think it's very possible there was a war crime committed. Of course, for it to be a war crime, you have to accept the Trump administration's whole construct here.
That we're at war.
Which is we're in armed conflict at war with the drug gangs. Of course, they've never presented the public with the information they've got here. But it could be worse than that, right? If that theory is wrong, then it's plain murder.
The first strike is murder in that case.
That's correct.
You're alleging.
That's correct. Well, I'm saying that it's either murder from the first strike if their whole theory is wrong. And I think, you know, the weight of the legal opinion here is that they've concocted this ridiculous legal theory. But even if you accept their legal theory, that it is a war crime. And so I do believe that the Secretary of Defense should be held accountable for giving those kind of orders.
And this is happening as, of course, you have the Secretary of Defense also.
When the Democrats take the House, and if they take the Senate in the fall, I think you're going to see a mass exodus of a lot of these people because they're going to be afraid. But this is the type of thing, incidentally, where the video that was put out by those seven Democratic lawmakers, as much as it's a little cringe in my mind just because of the nature of it. But it resonates because that SEAL Team 6 guy, I don't know what information he needed other than what he had to know that what he was doing was a war crime. Like the idea that those people in that boat were A, represented an imminent threat to the United States in and of themselves is obviously a joke, but that they're part of a larger network of small passenger boats that represent an imminent threat to the United States is also a complete joke. It's a tiny, tiny Navy.
The same SEAL Team 6, by the way, who murdered those three fishermen in North Korea under the last Trump administration, if you remember.
Right.
Cowboys.
They're trying to create a pretext, basically, for all-out war with Venezuela, or at the very least, Trump's version of, like, diplomacy is punching them in the mouth, he probably feels like, and then they'll come to the table. And if they don't, then they'll use that as a pretext. But they're just like much they're lazy about it, too. They don't and they're incompetent. So they're not able to create a pretext in a way that, I don't know, justifies the gravity of the action they're trying to take. And the administration is deeply unpopular and it runs counter to what he was trying to say about being anti-war.
It's all a crap show. And, you know, again, he spoke to Maduro, I guess, at the end of last week or at one point last week to talk about potential talks. Meanwhile, they're floating the idea that there's going to be a ground invasion of Venezuela. It just seems highly unlikely to me, but it's hard to know where they will stop. And really, like, who in the administration is this excited about this? Because it's very hard for me to imagine that Donald Trump is this keyed into it. Although, I mean, he pushed Guaido quite a bit last time, and he's certainly oriented towards oil and whatnot. But this seems very aggressive for a guy who feels like they're teetering on the edge of having any awareness of what's going on in their administration. Here's Donald Trump with his Thanksgiving message.
Oh, do I need my tissues? I have ran out.
This is going to be very heartwarming. If you missed this on Thanksgiving, here's an opportunity for you. A very happy Thanksgiving salutation to all our great American citizens and patriots who have been so nice in allowing our country to be divided, disrupted, carved up, murdered, beaten, mugged, and laughed at.
Most of all, laughed at.
The laughed at is the part that hurts the most.
along with certain other foolish countries throughout the world for being politically correct and just plain stupid when it comes to immigration.
So he was being sarcastic about great American citizens and patriots?
Yeah. And by he, I think Stephen Miller wrote this, by the way.
I don't know. It's tough to come up with like a long sentence like that, but I guess if you're really trying.
But Stephen,
this rivals what he said at that Turkey pardon thing. Maybe we should pull up that. But the official United States foreign population stands at 53 million people. Census.
I do not think that's true, by the way.
I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised, but it depends on what you mean by foreign population.
Because it's around, there's like, 14 million, 12 million immigrants who are undocumented in this country?
I mean, it's not, but he's talking about people who are documented, too.
He's talking about documented. Right. He's just talking about...
No, I get it. I'm just making it clear that this is about ethnic cleansing.
He's absolutely talking about people.
30 million who are here on green cards or residents or whatnot. That wouldn't surprise me. Yep. Most of which are on welfare. That is a lie. From failed nations, I don't know what that means, but glass houses.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say.
Or from prisons, mental institutions, gangs, or drug cartels. That, of course, is a lie. We can look at just the numbers, frankly, of the roundups that we have seen by the ICE and Customs Border Patrol. And the numbers are extremely, like, the percentages of people who have any type of criminal record that's even remotely associated with gangs or drug cartels is infinitesimally small. They're getting people for, like, DUIs, arrests, but not necessarily convictions. They're getting people for, you know, didn't pay a parking ticket. And even then, the numbers are small relative to the people that they have detained. Let's go pop this back up. They and their children are supported through massive payments from patriotic American citizens,
PACs,
who, because of their beautiful hearts, do not want to openly complain or cause trouble in any way, shape, or form. So he's saying that there's a deep, quiet resentment amongst the American public for doing something that he's pretending
the
they're doing.
The silent majority.
The silent majority. Also, with the invisible thing that they're doing. They put up with that. They put up with what has happened to our country, but it's eating them alive to do so. A migrant earning $30,000 with a green card will get roughly $50,000 in yearly benefits for their family. That's absurd. The real migrant population is much higher.
What? Higher than the 53 million, which is like, what, a sixth of the country?
You mean second generation now.
This refugee burden is the leading cause of social dysfunction in America.
I mean, if you believe that, folks, and not...
We could just take Springfield, Ohio, as an example, right? Instead of Haitians eating dogs and cats there, we know that the Haitian immigrants in that community have raised the value of property from slumlord level into decent housing stock. They have created an enormous amount of economic activity in a city that was dying on the vine before they got there. So it's literally the opposite of what he's talking
all
about.
All of these places that are now struggling to keep people, rural America, the Rust Belt, they were most vivid, not when they were all white, but when the white people were like speaking different languages because they were fresh off the boat themselves.
This refugee burden is the leading cause of social dysfunction in America, something that did not exist after World War II. Parentheses, failed schools, high crime, urban decay, overcrowded hospitals, housing shortages, and large deficits. Well, first off,
they fixed the hospital crowding by just getting rid of everybody's insurance.
Yeah, right. Then you die on the side of the road. No more hospitals for you.
The failed schools, incidentally, back at that time, were segregated. And
right.
We only counted basically white schools as failing or not failing.
What was the tax rate after World War II?
The tax rate at that time, when we did not have large deficits, was 90% on every dollar that you earned over $470,000, which would be today's money, $3 million. So if you made $4 million, your first $3 million would have been taxed at something in the 30s, let's just call it 35%. And that last million from $3 to $4 million would have been taxed $900,000. you would have been taxed.
I think that we don't do that anymore is probably a bigger issue than the immigrants.
We should also say, in terms
it's
of
not
high,
racist enough.
High crime and urban decay. Crime is largely across most major American cities now at a 30 to 35 year low. You know what we didn't have too much in the 1940s either was 20 years of people just sucking up all the lead in the air from high density in high density places like cities with enormous amounts of car traffic spewing leaded gasoline particles in the air.
Giving people brain damage that leads them to be prone to violence.
20 years after that was made illegal, of course, crime drops, not just across this country, but internationally 20 years after in every instance that that has been outlawed. Anyways, back to Trump. As an example, hundreds of thousands of refugees from Somalia are completely taking over the once great state of Minnesota.
Okay, there's 61,000 Somali refugees, Somali residents.
Take it over. Taking it over. You can't see. Somalian gangs are roving the streets looking for prey.
This is just Nazi stuff.
As our wonderful people stay locked in their apartments and houses, hoping against hope that they will be left alone. This is definitely Stephen Miller.
Yep.
This is where it becomes clear that it's Stephen Miller. Just he can't help the flourishes in the way that Trump just, it's too boring. The seriously R-word governor of Minnesota, he doesn't say R-word, I do, Tim Walz, does nothing either through fear, incompetence, or both. While the worst congressman/woman in our country.
Are they doing...
No,
it's not. She's saying that Ilhan on
he just doesn't want to write Congress
member of Congress. Yeah.
No, he's saying the worst Congress per member of Congress.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but he's doing congressman or congresswoman.
He's doing a Republican version of gender neutral.
Exactly.
He can't just say member of Congress. Yeah.
Well, the worst congressman, congresswoman in our country, Ilhan Omar, always wrapped her in swaddling hijab.
What?
Swaddling hijab, who probably came into the USA illegally in that you are not allowed to marry a brother, does nothing but hatefully complain about our country, its constitution, and how badly she's treated when her place of origin is a decadent.
Decadent?
Trump doesn't
it's
use
so
that
decadent.
Word.
He meant desolate or something.
Trump doesn't use the word decadent.
No, he does, but in a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, back at Studio 54, decadent. It was awesome. Backward and crime-ridden nation, which is essentially not even a country for lack of government, military, police, school, etc.
Happy Thanksgiving.
I forgot.
So, this was enjoy your turkey. Month. Yes. A very happy Thanksgiving salutation.
So basically that prompted that insanely racist screed prompted Tim Walz to respond to him, which then Trump responded to. Tim Walz. Yeah, here he is. I guess we can play this. But he reacted to this and pointed out some of the reporting on Trump's health issues that the New York Times had put out, you know, showing basically that he comes into work at around 11 a.m. He typically works between 12
Shout
and 5 p.m. They included this video in the Times article of him dozing off, remember, in that in that press conference with RFK and Dr. Oz, where that other guy passed out, and Trump was like kind of looking confused as he stood up. And they also showed a calculation of the fact that his public appearances have decreased by 39% this time around. And
I don't think there's a problem there. Yeah. What are you talking about? I'm doing is Trump wearing Zohran, covering his right hand.
You'll be happy to know that the Times piece also included a close-up photo of the hand, they're doing some digging on it. But I think it's Trump does not want to look weak. And I think that this is where he starts to unravel a little bit about this, especially because
that's why I play golf so much, so yeah. I get my strength up.
And there was a photo of him over the weekend at Mar-a-Lago looking rough. But here's Tim Walz doing what he does best in this area, is like needling the Republicans and seem to piss off Trump.
Well, here we got a guy on Thanksgiving, where we spent time with our families, we ate, we played Yahtzee, we cheered for football or whatever. This guy is apparently in a room ranting about everything else. This is not normal behavior. It is not healthy. And presidents throughout time have released a couple things. They've released their tax returns, not Donald Trump, and they've released their medical records, not Donald Trump. And look, the MRI is one thing, but I think what's most concerning about this is, as your viewers out there are listening, has anyone in the history of the world ever have an MRI assigned to them and have no idea what it was for, as he says? So, look, it's clear the president's fading physically. I think the mental capacity, again, ranting, you know, crazily at midnight on Thanksgiving about everything else. There's reasons for us to be concerned. This is a guy that randomly says the airspace over Venezuela is closed. He's ruminating on if you could win a nuclear war. Look, this is a serious position. It's the most powerful position in the world. And we have someone at midnight throwing around slurs that demonize our children. At the same time, he's not solving any of the problems. So I'm deeply concerned that he is incapable of doing the job.
Hmm. Fun. Like it.
All I did was say happy Thanksgiving to people.
It's crazy that Trump's sober, too, doing this stuff.
I know.
Midnight.
I know.
It has never not been.
How sober, though?
Well, right.
Okay, he's not boozing, though.
He's not boozing.
Yeah, yeah. He's amped up.
Here he is on this. Now, is this a throwback? Right. No, this is from, yeah, this is from
about
the
same day.
This is from about 10 days ago. No, this is today.
Yesterday. This was in the evening after that Tim Walz appearance in the morning.
This isn't Shut Up, Piggy.
He's still talking about his MRI. And again, the MRI came around the 10th, which is when he goes in for his monthly annual health inspection.
About 3 weeks ago.
It's my third annual I've gotten this year.
This is a perfect one.
I'm super healthy.
They calibrate the machines on me.
But he asked about my MRI. MRIs are very...
Governor Walz asked you to release the MRI.
Will you tell us what it was
governor
for?
Governor Walz, you mean the incompetent governor. So if they want to release it, it's okay with me to release it. It's perfect.
What was the number they
called? It's like my phone call where I got impeached. It's absolutely perfect. So... if you want to hear about it, or if you want to release it, you want to have it released.
Yes,
News Nation,
please.
Failing News Nation.
Can you pause it? I'm sorry. We just have to. I just want to chew on this just for a second. First of all, he refers to his MRI as perfect, like his phone call to the Georgia governor, which, if people recall. Or was it the lieutenant governor or the governor?
Find me votes call?
Yeah, where he said, you just have to find me X number of votes so I can win Georgia.
Nailed it. Perfect.
Yeah. The fact that he's comparing his MRI and his health issues to being perfect, just like the very imperfect and incriminating phone call that he was engaged in trying to overturn the election, means, oh my God, this MRI must be so imperfect that we can't even imagine it. If he's like, that's where his brain's going.
I mean, it was perfect, as in the call that got me impeached. That's. But he just hears the word perfect. He hears himself throw out perfect, and then he's like, perfect, perfect.
Tangential thinking.
I've heard that before. Perfect.
Perfect.
It's just word association. It's just like a weird psychological test.
But he's turned on perfect.
I remember when my dad said that bat was perfect over there.
Yeah.
And it was just.
As he was beating you with it.
This would be perfect to hit you with, Donald. Oh. Wait, okay.
Oh, and all of a sudden there's Brad Raffensperger pitching the ball to me.
Yeah. And he is turning on News Nation now? God.
Failing News Nation.
God, yeah. I mean, who's left?
Well, I got impeached. It's absolutely perfect. So if you want to hear about it, or if you want to release it, you want to have it released. News Nation. Failing News Nation. News Nation is doing lousy, by the way. But if you want to have it released, I'll
Another.
So
it's a point right in their forehead.
You'd be incapable of doing. You would never be able to take a cognitive test.
Wait, what?
You wouldn't even be able to get into the room.
Are you trying to say that he's trying to invade a woman's personal space?
He would never
do that.
You weren't here, but we administered the cognitive test to Sam.
I did end up actually watching that.
Oh, you weren't here? Oh, yeah.
I watched it because I saw that. I was like, I gotta see this.
Perfect.
You did perfect.
You would know a piggy if you saw one piggy.
Yeah.
Wasn't there animals on there?
Sorry, Emma. Looks like I did perfect on the cognitive test. I'll be here for a long time.
You ducked it. You avoided it.
Yeah. I wasn't too afraid
for the cognitive test. Maybe Emma should take a cognitive test.
I'm too emotional.
Since I did so great on it. To be honest with you, I don't remember a single question from it.
And that's why you're not eligible for the most perfect MRI.
It starts off easy with the lions and the zebras and stuff.
What kind of MRI did he get? Because
I don't know, but it wasn't like, my brain.
They just did it around my foot. And I said, why are you doing this around my foot? And then I said, don't answer that. I don't want to even know. I'm going to make it like I don't even know what the MRI is for.
La, 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 don't tell me la, 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 la.
Listen, they just tell me to get into this machine for a period of time. I don't ask any questions.
The perfect brain. I aced the cognitive test.
I think it's actually possible that they send Jared in there or Ivanka with him, and they're just like, Dad, you need an MRI. Okay.
Okay, like, no, like, but just geez. Like. He's so deeply neurotic, though, right? I mean, isn't he very... He's a germaphobe, Donald Trump.
I'm sure...
That's why you need Ivanka there.
Yeah.
First off, I'm not sure I believe all that.
Okay.
I think that, you know, that to me feels like stories that were put out to avoid other stories. Like the old germaphobe thing and whatnot. That just sounds like, to me, stories that they put out to explain some of his behavior that may not be explainable by other things. But even if that's the case, the idea that he goes in there and they just tell him to do something and he doesn't ask anything, they have to have a handler there. Like it really does.
The MRI is golden. We painted it golden for you.
No, the MRI, this is the prototype for the med bed. Yeah. This is, you are going in for healing and you can't tell people about it. You can't tell anybody about it, but it's curing you.
Every American will soon receive their own med bed card.
I wonder if they have to tell him stuff like that to keep him. Listen, we don't want to talk about the med bed technology, so just pretend this is an MRI if anybody asks.
I think the most likely explanation is him just being such a liar that this is how the mode he slips into no matter what. It's super easy. He knows what he's getting an MRI for. He knows what he's getting an MRI for.
He must. He must know. What's the pointy thing in my hand for?
Yeah.
What's the drippy drip?
It's a little bit of a giveaway when you can say it for sure wasn't my brain. But yeah. I don't know what it is.
Other than that, I got no answers for you.
That's what I'm saying. His intrusive.
It definitely wasn't because I'm getting Alzheimer's and have no idea where I am half the time. It definitely wasn't for that.
I have parallel thinking.
You're going to have to come up what it was for, though, because I can't come up with a fake lie.
Oh, I would love to tell you what it is. I'm not going to, but I'd love to. I could if I wanted.
Don't.
Wouldn't you like to know?
you'd think you'd be able to. It was my Achilles heel.
Oh, yeah. I tore my ACL playing basketball.
I was tossing the pigskin with my sons.
I was playing golf still with my ankle twisted. So let's go to the fun half, and then we'll show his polling numbers also seemingly in the toilet. Another Republican announced, Texas Republican this time, announced his retirement, not resignation. So he's staying on until the end of the year. But it's getting late for retirements. People announcing that, and we are probably 6 months off from primaries in most states, maybe a little bit less in some places. It's going to be interesting to see if we hear more over the next couple of days. I would imagine we might hear one or two more, but we shall see. In the meantime, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Don't forget, we got Trump Slump stickers in there in our merch store. It's a great time to go buy gifts for people. Shop.majorityreportradio.com. Also, check out AM Quickie, amquickie.com. Email with all the top stories of the day. Corey and Whitney doing a great job writing that up. People are loving it. A couple of bucks gets you 5 days a week. And again, your support, if you want to become a member of this program, join themajorityreport.com. And don't forget Just Coffee. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, but they've got a 30% discount this year, this month. So this is a great time. If you've been wondering about Just Coffee, this is the time to try it. You can try the Majority Report blend. You can try any of their single origins or their other blends. But you've been thinking about trying Just Coffee for months and months and months and months. Go check it out today. JustCoffee.coop. JustCoffee.coop. And Matt, what's happening in the MLU?
Yeah, a big Jacobin show Friday with Kurt Hackbarth and Jose Luis of Soberania podcast talking about Mexico. A lot of literary stuff on Left Reckoning for the Patreon Sunday, patreon.com/Left Reckoning. I talked about George Orwell's Notes on Nationalism, which Noah Smith recently recommended, which is you should not hold against that essay. And also tomorrow I'll be talking about Shadow Ticket with Devin O'Shea. I can't wait. I talked to Devin about One Battle After Another in Vineland earlier, so now we're going to talk about the new Thomas Pynchon novel.
It's like a literary hangover.
A little bit. David's finishing up his book and on a little break, so I'm making it
while the cat's away. All right. Folks, see you in the fun half. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous. You're a little bit upset. You're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
flamethrower handle.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me,
hey, shut up.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.
We are back. Emma Vigeland, Sam Cedar, Majority Report, fun half. Hicklib, can I get a shofar for my birthday today? Happy late birthday to Sam and happy early birthday to Matt. Also, let's all know we're having a snow day today and should get 3 to 4 inches. Happy birthday to Hicklib. Jerv, is the congressman that retiring for the 31st district? If so, the Sham Wow guy is running for the GOP nomination to replace him. No, it's I don't think it is that guy. Todd from Raleigh, Sam, if you want to get that sixth award, applications for the Webbies are open. You know, the problem with that is you've got to pay.
Is there a best producer category?
There very well may be. But you've got to pay. I mean, those things are, I don't know. Five is a nice round number. If you start doing six, then all of a sudden people are going to ask, why not seven or eight? But we can't get more than five from the podcast awards. They name the award after us. That's the way I think. Amy from the UK. Hi, Sam, Emma, Brian, Matt. Happy birthday for Friday. Came across this campaign from Jerry Cohen, co-founder of Ben & Jerry's, who's attempting to pressure Unilever to make Ben & Jerry's independent. As Unilever has been leaning on the company to stop supporting Palestine, thought it might be a good idea to get MR fans to sign this letter, which can be done at freebenandjerrys.com/sign-the-letter.
Unilever is also the people who bought Joe Rogan's pill company.
Oh, that's right.
They supported free speech there.
Well, that's a different type of free speech. That's one that they can monetize. Today. Was it today? Harry Enten was on this morning on CNN. And Donald Trump's numbers not going well. Here is Harry Enten.
It's a disaster if it holds towards the midterm elections. And I should note, of course, it's not alone. I mean, just take a look here. This is Gallup. This is the longest running poll. You know, Gallup has been conducting polls since my father was a kid. And my father was born in 1927, had me in the 60s. Look at this. In January, Donald Trump's not approving.
Pause it for 1 second.
Not too great.
Doesn't he make so much more sense
yes,
to you now?
He's...
Oh, totally. I mean, he was raised by someone who grew up like who was
he liked big band, like that was
yeah
poppy.
Exactly
right. So that's why he talks like he's like a 1950s newsie.
What does he mean he had him in the 60s?
He had him in
his 60s. Father was in his 60s when he had him.
Oh, I thought he meant in the 1960s. Okay, I was gonna say, okay, so Harry was born in
just 88. Another, you know, we've been trying to unpack the mystery of Harry Enten on this show.
It's all coming.
I really have.
Yeah,
father was 61. Still time for me.
Yeah, hello, my money.
27, had me in the 60s. Look at this. In January, Donald Trump's not approving. Not too bad, not too great. It was at minus 1 point, right within the margin of error, breaking even. But look at this now. Negative 24 points. Way, way down. We're talking about a drop of over 20 points in the wrong direction for the president of the United States. Minus 24 points. That's a 23-point move in the incorrect direction if you're the president. And, of course, what's so important
Harry
here,
Emden.
Sarah Seidner, is it matches the trend that we've seen with other polls. That is Donald Trump hitting his low for the second term. I was doing the count last night. I think we're up to 10 polls in sort of the last 40 days, 10 different pollsters who have said that Trump is at the lowest point he is in his second term.
So how does this compare to other presidents in their second term at this point in time?
Yeah, okay. So, you know, this is one of these great examples where I kind of run out of room on the slide.
You
so
sure
I just
did.
Yeah, I run out of room on the slide. So I just put up the Republican presidents. But look, the only one who's worse for me, either among Republicans or Democrats at this point in his second term, is Richard Nixon. And of course, Richard Nixon had to wave adios amigos goodbye less than a year after this poll was taken. He was at minus 36 points. Trump at minus 24 points. That beats, or is worse, I should say, beats in the wrong direction. George W. Bush, minus 19 points. His Republican Party, of course, suffered major losses in the 2006 midterm elections. Dwight Eisenhower, plus 31 points. Donald Trump has never smelt that at all. I had to go into the archives to pick up that photo. And Ronald Reagan at plus 41 points. But again, it also is worse than Harry S. Truman. It's worse than Lyndon Baines Johnson. It's worse than Barack Obama. It's worse than Bill Clinton. Anywhere you look, this is the second worst for a president of either party at this point in their second term, dating all the way back since the 1940s.
Wow. All right. Look, what does this mean for the midterms? Because are you seeing a trend that it's linked to how people feel about the president?
Yeah, okay. So, you know, we always say, hey, look, you know, we still got 11 months until the midterm elections. Right. That's forever in politics. So I decided to go back and look at this point in the second term. What happened? What was the trend line heading into the midterm elections? Were there any presidents who saw their net approval ratings rise by more than 5 points? Well, guess what, Sarah Sider? You go all the way back since Harry S. Truman. 0 out of 8 times did the president's net approval rating rise by over 5 points. And of course,
we'll see what happens when I attack Venezuela, though. That should help. Is it more?
Minus 24 points. He's in the minus teens according to the average. If he does not see a rise of more than 5 points, see you later, that Republican majority. It has never happened. Of course, we live in such a weird time of politics.
We are in a weird time.
We live in a weird time, but he's going to have to break history, Sarah Sider.
All right, we will have to see.
Yeah, fascism is kind of a weird time. They did that same poll, Gallup, on the issues. There's not one where he's above 50%. His best is crime, which I still can't understand. I mean, I guess it makes sense when you look at the fact that crime is down. And he talks about crime all the time.
Yeah, I mean, so, if you're activated by fear appeals around crime, you're going to always think that...
Crime.
Foreign affairs is his second best, which is probably buoyed by the fact that he did, you know, achieve the ceasefire in Gaza, but the ceasefire is not...
But let's be clear, he's underwater in all of them.
I know. But, and by the way, I just want to make it clear that the ceasefire is... It's not being...
A sham.
It's a sham. Foreign trade, but immigration, you know, the Democrats have been running from this issue for the past basically 3 years. And just by being this callous and cruel, he's only at 37% approval on immigration. The economy is dragging it down. Israel-Palestine, though, they're 33% approval only. The federal budget, 31%, 31% on Ukraine. And then healthcare policy is his worst issue. So Democrats are going to be right to focus on that because, one, it looks like there doesn't seem to be a deal on the table right now about these ACA premiums, and people are already getting notifications that, you know, they can go onto this free marketplace and pay double what they maybe previously were paying because of the Republican Party. But there also are these hospital closures are already beginning to happen. The CNN had a report. It was how life changed in a rural town that lost its clinic after Trump's mega bill. And it's about this area of Virginia, a 200-person community that basically had the entirety of its healthcare done away with. And it's directly the healthcare institutions. It's directly the result of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act because it lost its only health clinic.
The only upshot on the healthcare front is Ozempic is apparently one of the drugs that Medicare is negotiating with. One of the, I think it's 10 drugs this year. And of course, this was passed by the Biden administration. It barely kicked in while they were in office.
As always,
classic,
massive strategy.
Classic Democratic strategy. I think they do that because they're afraid of reconciliation bills seeming too expensive, which, you know, I at one point they'll get over this. We'll see. Let's check out number five and number six. New Yorkers, ICE is coming to New York, and they're, in fact, they've been here, but they're getting, it's getting more aggressive. But let's start with Kristi Noem. Kristi Noem was asked by on Meet the Press, was it?
Kristen Welker.
Yeah. Kristen Welker on Meet the Press. Why DHS is putting out tweets talking about re-migration, or I should say, yeah, re-migration. And re-migration is a fascistic term. Oh, I had it right here, and of course I lost it. I'll just give you the history on this. It is a far-right concept originally from Europe of ethnic cleansing via the mass deportation of non-white immigrants and their descendants, sometimes including those born in Europe, with local citizenship to the place of racial ancestry. Now, of course, if we were actually to do remigration in this country, we would all be asked to leave in this office.
Yes. Anybody who wasn't indigenous, but the Trump administration treats them like crap, too. And, you know, was doing like fascist propaganda over Thanksgiving about the frontier and erasing that genocide.
Settler fascism, the same thing Israel's going into right now.
It's popular, especially within the identitarian movement. Some proponents of remigration suggest excluding some persons with non-European background from mass deportation based upon a varyingly defined degree of assimilation into European culture.
And just on that, like when you think about that concept of remigration, you can see why you have, and Matt just brought up the issue of Israel, but Nazis in this country, white nationalists who are anti-Semitic, still being pro-Israel in many ways, is because their contention is that every ethnicity or racial group should have its own nation, and that is what should define it.
Richard Spencer said this explicitly.
Yes, and that's why, you know, we talk about the concept of Israel being such a dangerous one, one that is defining a state based on ethnic or purity, basically, or on a religion in and of itself, and then it necessitates maintaining that by force and domination. This is the right-wing vision of the world, and remigration is their kind of expansion of that.
And here she is asked about it.
President Trump wrote on Thursday, quote, "Only reverse migration can fully cure this situation." On Friday, DHS posted, quote, "Remigration now." As you probably know, this term has been used in different situations, but including by the far right in Europe to call for the mass deportation of non-white immigrants. How specifically does the Trump administration define remigration?
Well, President Trump has been working towards cleaning up the mess that Joe Biden left us ever since he came into the White House.
But how do you define that word, Secretary Noem?
Biden let 15... Well, first of all, we have criminal illegal aliens we've been targeting since day one. We have removed millions of people from this country already just in the few short months that President Trump has been president by making sure we're going after criminal illegal aliens that are murderers, rapists, and criminals, and getting them out of our country, bringing them to justice, and then encouraging people to go home.
Criminals doing crime.
If you're here illegally and breaking our laws, you can leave now, and you may get the opportunity to come back someday. But if you wait until we detain you, and we will deport you, and you'll never get the chance to come back to America and visit us or become a citizen. We're going to continue to do that, go after those criminals, go after those individuals that came in under programs that were broken on the Biden administration, and people who were in place and leadership in that crazy, crazy four worlds we lived through, 4 years we lived through before President Trump came in. Thank God we have a president now that recognizes that letting all of these people into our country that we don't know who they are is dangerous.
She's good. Wait, is there no follow-up on this? Well, I asked you twice and you didn't answer, so I'll let you just keep rambling.
Go ahead.
This is, I was quoted in this piece from Mediaite earlier this summer. A Trump DHS accused of cryptically including white supremacist slogan in tweet. I'm one of the people who, this is basically a heritage should be proud of, a homeland worth defending. That's American Progress, John Gass. That's 14 words and the H's are capitalized for Hail Hitler. It is a matter of fact. And it has been so since the first Trump administration, where I have tweets about this. They were doing the same sort of thing. There are explicit, and we're not talking about like people on the street, you know, fighting Antifa or whatever. There are in power in the United States government Nazis, white supremacists, who get off on this sort of messaging. It's explicit. It's obvious. We should understand what it is, as opposed to say like, Kristi Noem, how do you? She
can we give you an opportunity to try and get, come up with some type of alibi for this?
It's the same one that the Nazis use.
Yeah. I mean, the AFD was like the major European party that was promoting the idea of remigration. That if you recall, the AFD is that, like, you know, almost
alternative for Deutschland.
Alternative for Deutschland, far right party that Elon Musk was promoting that has engaged in like Holocaust denial. That's how far right they are. They had posters during the elections with the tagline Summer Sun Remigration. I'm not sure exactly necessarily what the first two words mean in German. But it's also been tied to this guy, Martin Sellner, who is a far right figure in Europe, in Austria, I believe. And he was, I think, you know, at the very least supportive of, or had rhetoric that was supportive of, the Christchurch white supremacist killing before. And his wife, Brittany Sellner, is an American, and she's an open white nationalist and a great replacement theory conspiracy theorist. So they're literally just like using the terms of explicit white nationalists without any apology. And Matt, you were like getting people saying like, oh, like you're reading way too much into this. They're doing this on purpose. Like Tucker Carlson's staff, when we found out that they were basically 4chan Nazi posters, would do lay Easter eggs in his monologues so that it would get picked up on by the far right. They're now just explicitly saying the terms, and they're doing it from official government accounts.
Let's look at the other side of, well, I don't know if I would call it of the same coin necessarily, but certainly actions by patriots to protect their community members. Somebody found out, apparently, in New York City, down, I don't know where they were, maybe in Chinatown, yeah, just south of Canal, that DHS and ICE was... they were organizing in a parking lot, in a parking garage, and folks found out about it and attempted to make it more difficult for them to leave the facility. Here is footage.
Talia Levin had was on the scene there and got this footage.
Talia Jane on Twitter.
On Twitter.
Best city, baby.
I saw New York.
I mean, there ended up being, over the course of the weekend, I saw footage of like people putting planters in the road to stop them. And
apparently there was a line at like a food store right across the way, and a lot of people just got out of line to participate in this blockage. I saw somebody on MSNBC from like a New York immigration group saying that, which I found to be very, very New York, very beautiful.
I mean, this is the thing we talked about with New York, is that it's just so dense. There's so many people around. So, you know, you have the same amount of ICE guys going to try and round up people. But all of a sudden, instead of there being 15 or 20 people on a block who are going to see you, all of a sudden you've got literally the potential of thousands of people around you. You know, all it takes is 10% of those, and all of a sudden you've got 100 people are surrounding your vehicle, you know, less, or I should say more than that. So
The NYPD was helping ICE, by the way, at this point. There's been footage showing that being the case. We've got a month left in the Eric Adams lame duck period, and he's off jet setting. But we'll see how that if that changes. Hopefully, Zoran Mamdani is able to kind of rein that in. And I would imagine that was a part of his backroom kind of conversations with Tish, the commissioner, when he agreed to keep her on. I would hope so.
I'll tell you what I'm surprised about when I see this footage, because you have like people like literally blocking these vehicles, and I'm surprised that people aren't like, you know, taking garden hoses and putting nails through them in a like 360 degrees and storing them in like some type of like small case in their backpack and dropping them in front of tires of these vehicles. Yep. That I find very surprising.
That is shocking.
Because that is, you know, a technology that has been around for a while, where you would put nails through small pieces of like garden hose or any type of like hose. You could actually just buy that plastic at like a, you know, Home Depot, like a clear plastic tube. And you put, I mean, I've seen people do that. I'm just surprised we haven't seen that.
It is odd, yeah.
Open conversation is the way of humans connecting.
There you go. But, let's play that footage of Home Depot. Did we play that? Everybody was in line?
I had that last week. I don't remember if we played that.
I don't think we did.
This was great. I came across this apparently as a protest against Home Depot. As you know, Home Depot has been allowing ICE to use their parking lots both as a way for them to, what do you call it, organize or and stage, exactly. But also, they've been going on raids there, approaching people who look like they could be Central or Latin American, and questioning them, asking for their papers. And there's footage of like of ICE chasing people through the aisles of Home Depot, and Home Depot has not made. And Home Depot does not need to allow these ICE on their property. I mean, they can say like, you need to have a warrant if you're going to come here. You can't use this as some type of like dragnet space. And so, day laborers, organizers in California, and this is posted by Molly Plufkin. Is that what it is? On Molly Plufkin's on Twitter at Molly Plufkin's. Day labor organizers in California lining up at Home Depot to buy a 17-cent ice. I don't know if it's necessarily an ice scraper. It could have been just like a paint scraper or something like that. And repeat the process. Oh, and then return it as a way of jamming up the
both lines.
Yeah, both lines at Home Depot to as a protest against Home Depot's working with ICE. And here is some footage of that.
Oh,
Angela Eric's a drummer.
That's what actually was out of position.
Hey. Can I have everybody's attention, please? If you're purchasing something,
I have been volunteering with.
You can come to this side. Come to this side, and the customers walk through. Thank you. Not to say.
Total run on those scrapers. good for them.
But he's still
good for them.
I like a good amount of money.
Appreciate that work. Let's fire up the phones. The post Thanksgiving. Oh, come on. There we go. Oh, it works. I heard it. But I heard it, Matt.
Get to double check.
Now, do we hear it? Yeah, okay. Folks, the number is 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. Tamor from the 5. Did you see that the Stop Anti-Semitism Now released their annual Anti-Semite of the Year nominations? Surprised there weren't more left-wing political commentators like you guys on it. Also, no Greta, despite being on one but two flotillas this year. Most standout name, fellow global national Trevor Miss Treasure Miss Rachel, and also Cynthia Nixon, or as I know, are the only reason to watch Just Like That. The idea that they put Miss Rachel on there, or Cynthia Nixon for that matter,
yeah,
is disgusting.
They're clowns.
I haven't seen the list. I guess I would look it up, but I wonder if they're not putting Jews on there because they're a little bit nervous about that.
Yeah, I do think it is pretty awesome. Like, not for Miss Rachel, who deserves none of this horrific harassment, but you want to, let's just triple down on this Stop Anti-Semitism. You want to attack, like, the modern Mr. Rogers that every parent relies on for the most part and is so unimpeachably kind and good. If you want to keep saying that this is like anti-Semitism in order to further Zionism, I just think it makes your argument way weaker. It's like having Sarah Horwitz out there.
Yeah, they don't understand that they have no credibility and it is just circling the drain. No one cares about this.
People are saying no audio on the phones.
I might maybe try recalling in.
Well,
I know what it is.
You got it?
Now it's fixed, yeah.
Okay, now it's fixed. Now you should be able to hear us on the phones. Only need one person to respond. Of course, there's no way for you to coordinate. Who would that be? It's working now. Okay, we don't need to hear Matt. Fixed. Okay, great. Okay, got it fixed. Calling from an 864 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from? 864.
Is this me?
It is you. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Yay! This is Dust, and I'm calling from inside of a truck somewhere in Southern Virginia. I'm on the road right now.
Okay.
I just got a quick question for y'all. I just wanted to pick your brain on something. Me and my coworker were kind of having a little reductionist debate as to whether the Nixon or the Reagan administration was more responsible for like the modern day MAGA movement, like undergirding it and stuff. I was just curious what y'all's opinion was on that. That's it.
Got to be Reagan.
I think it's Reagan, although, you know, it's not like there's been a broken lineage going back to, well, I mean, John Birch Society, frankly. But I would say that Reagan was a big part of it. You know, Reagan was the first sort of era when the civil rights movement really caught up, I think, with the Democratic Party. But you have to also remember, as of 2008, do you remember the book, Matt? I've cited this book a million times, and I can't remember what the name of it is. There was research that showed over 50% or about 50% of non-college-educated white people still believe that the Republican Party was to the left of Democrats on race. And, you know, the other 50%, I think Reagan reached them.
Yeah.
I mean, look at that approval rating from 1985 that was cited by Harry Enten. Like, that people get, you know, and, you know, with the Oklahoma story, like, there's a lot of psychos out there in this country that we have to contend with. But that the whole country was supporting Reagan then, whereas Trump's approval is as low as it is now, is, I think, a good sign.
But it's not like there wasn't a, you know, that Nixon, that Reagan was an apple that fell too far from the Nixon tree. Let's put it that way. I mean,
but you also had Nixon created, like, the EPA, cared a little bit about environmental standards,
let's
right?
Not attribute these to Richard Nixon, the man. Like, he as the executive, I mean, Corey Robin puts it this way, like, Nixon was sort of the last president under a sort of New Deal hegemony.
Yes.
As an individual, I don't know. I think he's actually pretty similar to Trump. He's a gangster involved with crime. Although he comes from much more humble background than Trump does.
Another way to say it too is also that Nixon was, like, you know, this was at the tail end of, like, Keynesianism falling apart. And then you have the more neoliberal era being ushered in. But that's really, like, you know, Nixon's at the tail end of that. And Jimmy Carter was in many ways responsible, too. But Reagan put it on overdrive with his gutting of taxes for the wealthy. And even Trump being, make America great again. He took that slogan from Ronald Reagan explicitly. And this news today is supposed to be World AIDS Day. To commemorate the people who were lost to HIV and AIDS, and the Trump administration, in the vein of Reagan, is basically, you know, ignoring AIDS and not recognizing it. And you can see the parallels there, too, with a lack of belief in even, like, public health to help certain people and throwing marginalized folks under the bus. I found that to be... This morning I was thinking about that very much in the vein of Reagan. So I don't know. It feels very Reaganite.
You could do worse than reading Rick Perlstein's Nixonland trilogy, which covers both ends of that question.
Okay, cool. I appreciate it. Left is best. Have a nice day, all.
Thanks for the call. Calling from a 603 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
I assume this is me.
It is you. And where are you calling from? And what is your name?
Hello, this is Ramona Frankenstein, and I'm calling from New Hampshire.
Ramona, hey, Frankenstein Ramona. From New Hampshire, from the Live Free or Die state.
Oh, yeah. We're so free in here, you know.
What's on your mind?
I want to talk a little bit about Jean Shaheen and her daughter, Stephanie Shaheen.
Let me ask you, how do you say the other senator's last name?
Maggie Hassan?
Hassan, okay.
Yeah. Both of them were governors, Maggie Hassan and Jean Shaheen.
Okay, great. All right, I was just curious. I was somebody, I had a New England accent argument with somebody. All right, but go ahead.
Jean Shaheen, as you know, was one of the ringleaders, if not like the figurehead of the revolt to reopen the government. She is the reason why many of us are going to be paying hundreds, if not thousands more, for our health insurance this coming year.
Mm.
Her handpicked successor is Chris Pappas, who is currently the congressman from New Hampshire's 1st District, and he sucks.
Yep.
He voted to censure Rashida Tlaib. He voted to, honor Charlie Kirk on his birthday. Just an awful guy all around. He's gotten tons of money from AIPAC, but... running to replace him, the front runner in that race right now is Stephanie Shaheen, who is Jean Shaheen's daughter, and to my knowledge has no government experience. And she just posted on her TikTok a video of her coming into her family Thanksgiving dinner. And it was the meme of like, oh, hey, like awkward because she walked in and it's like, oh, I have a different position than you, Mom, on the bill that you voted for. And the video got hundreds of comments of people saying, this is in really poor taste. How could you do something like this? Your mother is the reason why I'm going to be paying so much in health insurance. And she limited the comments on her video and deleted all the negative ones.
So wait, Stephanie Shaheen has a better position than her mom.
She has said that she would not have voted for the bill.
Okay. And so, but people are feeling like this is cute, but it also has real real-world implications that you're just sort of glossing over with a cuteness.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Okay. It's a certain amount of callousness. It's like, you're going to vote for me anyway. I'm a Shaheen.
Right.
And, yep.
Well, I mean, I think this is like a big problem with our political class, and frankly, with also, you know, a significant portion of the rich in this country is they are so out of touch. They don't even know how out of touch they are. They're not like it's absolutely like beyond like a like an awareness. And so they, you know, it's Nancy Pelosi, you know, debating what ice cream they're arguing over during COVID when people are like, I'm afraid I can't even keep the electrical bill on. So, yeah, it's a problem. I don't know. I mean, I find the Pappas thing pretty disturbing to begin with. Like, never mind the cascading bad candidates that follow.
Yeah.
What are the chances? Who's running against Pappas?
One
candidate. Well, they're talking about this person.
Karishma Manzer is the top competitor. I believe there was recent polling, and Pappas has unfortunately, 60%, and Karishma Manzer had 8. So it would be an uphill battle, but I think that it is still worth campaigning for her. The more winnable seat it is looking like right now is Pappas's current seat, New Hampshire First, because Stephanie Shaheen, she's got 20% of the vote. And then the guy who I like, Heath Howard, he's 25 years old. He's running on Medicare for All. He's running on ending war in Palestine. He's great. He's only polling at 4, but in the latest poll, he's the only candidate who gained in the poll. And he is also gaining a lot of attention right now because Gene Shaheen was at the Eleanor Roosevelt dinner in Nashua, and she got heckled by Heath Howard. She was talking about how she and Maggie Hassan are the strongest fighters for the ACA. And he shouted out, "Then why did you vote to open the government?" And she snapped at him, very old woman yells at cloud, and just looks terrible. If you haven't seen this clip, you should look it up.
We will look for that. And we'll look into Keith Howard as well.
Yeah, Heath Howard.
Heath or Keith?
Heath with an H.
Ah, okay. All right, thanks. We will look into him.
All right. I will also say Paige Boschman is running against Maggie Goodlander in the 2nd District. She is also worth paying attention to.
Cool.
Okay. Ramona Frankenstein, thanks so much for the call. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Love you guys.
All right. Bye-bye.
Love you back.
Polymarxist, if Ben does end up winning Tennessee 7, I'm curious how likely it is you think Dems leftists take both the Senate and the House.
I'm not making that prediction.
I wouldn't make that prediction. I mean, Senate is going to be tough. I think the House right now, if you had to bet, I don't think should. particularly if you have a problem. And
if you're worried about the energy that would create, obviously.
And if you have magical thinking, you would definitely not want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, I think the House odds-on favorite are for the Democrats to take the House.
But there are some races that are notable that could be flips.
In the Senate.
Ohio, Sherrod Brown, obviously. Maine, Graham Plattner with Susan Collins, obviously.
Nebraska.
I mean, I think that, you know, Dan Osborne having lost before makes it a little bit like he has, you know, it might be a tougher road this time because he doesn't have the element of surprise, but he also may be able to build his name recognition. And you got farmers that are really pissed off. What's it looking like in Iowa?
I was just looking up as to who's going to be running in that primary. But I think Iowa is also, you know, I think it's very difficult to say right now because I think a lot of these states, particularly in the Midwest, are really hurting. And it's not getting the attention that it would in other circumstances, basically, if there was a Democratic presidency.
Right.
And but I think we're going to see the implications of that later in the race. All right, let's do this. You keep popping this up. You really want to get to. I'm really interested, actually, in this Rod Dreher thing, but let's do.
Well, you want to talk about Thanksgiving. So this is.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. We're still on Thanksgiving. Here's Bill Maher with his new rules about Thanksgiving. Does anybody really think that he spends it with family? I don't.
What family?
I think he has family.
I don't think he does. I mean, honestly, but I don't think he would. I think he's probably like his Thanksgiving is probably the least Thanksgiving that one can imagine. And I'm, I'm not a traditionalist in this. I mean, I was like.
There's nobody close to him that's not on a payroll.
I was going to say.
Yeah, that sounds right. And also for a guy that likes to think of himself as the cool hippie smoking weed, he's got the new rules thing. I mean, he's so far up his own ass. Like, you don't come off as the chill guy anymore, buddy. Well,
and that's the thing is we're skipping about 5 minutes into this new rule where it's sort of, again,
it's a complicated rule.
The hackneyed thing about, like, liberals, stop canceling your Republican friends.
No, going from no contact.
Wait, so this isn't a rerun? Okay.
No, this is. Oh, you'll see. This is current to this
long time Ann Coulter buddy. Literally, they're good friends.
Thanksgiving for you.
That's pretty hard to argue with. And I know the president of the United States called a woman piggy this week. And you're a better person than me because you hate it more than I do. But I hate it too, really. As well as 1,000 other things about the Trump administration I never stop pointing out on this show. But I'm an adult, and in the real world, there's some people you just can't stop talking to, like your spouse or partner after a bad fight, tempting as that is.
Sickening.
Like your
Can you
dick
pause
of a
it?
Boss.
I'm sorry, but why are we comparing Donald Trump to people's spouses as if people didn't make the active choice to marry their spouse?
I'm an adult, okay?
And some people, like, actually voted against Donald Trump, and even if you voted for him, you're not in a marriage contract. This is about democracy. But I think, what, he wants no-fault divorce for the country and Trump for the next 4 years?
I think what he's saying is that you should not... You should not let a major difference in politics impact your marriage. Incidentally, Bill Maher has never been married, has, by his own admission, probably rarely been in what he would call an age-appropriate relationship because he has no interest in maintaining it for any period of time. So with him, the range of things that keeps him from actually being in a long-term relationship is endless. But if you decide that, hey, I don't feel comfortable with this person I'm living with anymore because they don't seem to care that families are being ripped apart, that we have a massive kleptocracy, that millions of people are going to be immiserated,
then you're being too prissy.
But if she's 30.
But if she's 30 and she's thinking about getting to be like 35, you're like, whoa, hold on. We didn't talk about the idea difference. That you were going to age. We got to end this. Go ahead.
Like your family and like the president of the United States. This is so childish, so purely emotional. The people who got all butthurt because I had dinner with them, you know, because he's Hitler.
Talking about so-called butthurtness, which, speaking of childish, it is a very sophisticated term. But he had that dinner, what, like 6 months ago? This guy has been unable to let go of the fact that he was criticized for going to dinner with Donald Trump. And what he really has been unable to let go is that Larry David wrote a satirical piece in that didn't even mention him, but was clearly about him. This has eaten away at Bill Maher in a way that I think is unrivaled by anybody. Like, I'm sure there's some, like, maybe some feuds that have taken place in
like
in,
you
in
wish you like got under Maron's skin
world.
This much.
Exactly. Even Mark Maron
right.
does not hold a grudge, like a resentment this long. But the idea that he can't help, but like what it's also indicative of, and I will tell you, if Bill Maher was married,
yes,
or if Bill Maher had a family, this would be so far from his consciousness. But because his life is so empty.
Mm-hmm.
Of any type of real relationships, the idea that Larry David mocked him months ago is still in the forefront of his mind, and he thinks it is with his audience,
And he thinks that it's like an own to keep bringing it up. If he did have a partner in his life, they might be able to say, hey, honey,
let it go.
You know, it kind of looks like you're really obsessed with this when you bring this up ad nauseum over and over again. It doesn't make you look as unbothered as you think it
might. I'm not mad about it. I just have one more joke I want to make about it. It's not really a joke, but I just want more comments.
Yeah, that's a hilarious
thing. It just fits here. That's all I'm
honestly,
saying.
Honestly,
Thanksgiving.
Gutfeld might be like better conservative comedy than this because all he's doing is just soothing the grandpas that are watching this who are mad that their woke granddaughter or something or that their niece or that they have a non-binary, I don't know, son or something like that, is a little bit upset with them for supporting a fascist.
I can't even say the N-word when I say grace anymore because of my granddaughter.
I mean, God, exactly. Like it's like adult daycare in the form of television. It just soothes them ever so slightly.
Go back a little bit, Pat. Yeah. Let's just get him to talk about the complete war crime that was committed against him when people...
Not
when
even people Drake is this heard about what Kendrick did.
Exactly.
Like your dick of a boss, like your family, and like the president of the United States. This is so childish, so purely emotional. The people who got all butt hurt because I had dinner with them. You know, because he's Hitler. Except he's not. So unhelpful and dumb. Trump is the most supportive president Israel and
this
the
hilarious.
Jews ever had. You know, every year I used to ask Larry David to do real time, and he'd always say, Bill, I can't. I'm not smart enough about politics to do your show. Yeah, I get that now.
Incidentally, that woo-hoo... Brian can tell us, who was that? Woo-hoo!
That was probably a line producer.
Exactly!
That's my job. I'm the first guy there clapping really loud.
That is, I will tell you, with 100% assuredness, a paid member of the staff of the program trying to get everybody to hype it up. But let's go back and see how
But don't yet. Oh, I wanted to just look at Donna Brazile looking at her hands because she can't even look up at how embarrassing this whole
months
endeavor
months
is.
Months and months later, he's still mad at Larry David. Now, just remember, this is in the context of saying, don't be mad with your family members because of politics. However, you should hold a grudge for months and months and months about a satirical piece about something that I did that people felt was controversial. But listen to it's either the line producer Or I would say like the second AD. Yeah. Or it could have also been the guy they pay to do warm-up.
The warm-up guy.
He could have still be there on the side going, woo-hoo! Good.
You know, every year I used to ask Larry David to do real time, and he'd always say, Bill, I can't. I'm not smart enough about politics to do your show. Yeah, I get that now.
Brazil is embarrassed for him.
Because there is no argument here. There's just the sugar rush that the no-contact people get from never coming in second in a I hate Trump the most contest. Really? That's your strategy? To go full high school and tell the guy with all the power he can't sit with you at the lunch table? To borrow a phrase familiar to HBO viewers, you are not serious people.
Oh, my God. All right. First off, this is so pathetic. When Larry David said, I'm not smart enough about politics to come on your show, you'll notice they have a wide range of people on the show. That's Larry David's way of saying, I think you're a fucking schmuck.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be seen on your show. And I don't want to lend. I don't want to lend any of my cachet to your show. Like, I don't want you to get one more viewer because I'm there. That's what that means. But he surely must understand that. But also, the metaphor of people are mad at me for going and having dinner with Donald Trump is like not allowing the most powerful person to sit with you at the cafeteria. That's not a metaphor. That is like you're just harping on your dumbass like dinner with Trump and that you didn't get to enjoy it, but had to feel some creeping doubt that, hey, wait a second, did I do something really bad?
Yeah,
that's what it is.
He can't handle it. But that's giving him too much credit to think that he's grappling with the morality of it. He's just dealing with the shame because Larry's rich as hell and is like one of the most successful people in comedy in history and is way funnier than him. Do you know when that piece was written that he's doing this very timely monologue about? My dinner with Adolf?
It was around March. Yeah,
it was the end of March.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been 7 months.
Yep.
7 months, and he's lecturing the audience to get over your differences with your relatives or your loved ones about Trump, and he's doing a monologue about a satirical piece about him from 7 months ago.
And yeah, I'll just say, like, we could actually like start a campaign to get Larry David to write like another piece, like that time people wouldn't let me forget about my dinner with Hitler.
Shut up about my dinner with Hitler. This is the picture. He cropped out Kid Rock, which what's that guy, Dana White, which I also think is funny. But it's like, what are you going to do? Just leave the guy with all the power? It's like, what did you do? What did you get out of this meeting, Bill? Like,
he got a better understanding, which he's like now presenting to his audience like an adult, Matt.
I mean, that
he was
table.
Nice to me.
That table, like the whole monologue, also started off with Bill Maher being critical of people that are critical of Trump, saying "quiet piggy" to that female reporter. You know, I guess I'm just soothed when I see that photo because it looks just like a table of people that respect women.
Exactly.
Hanging out. Yeah. Dana White,
famously
Kid Rock,
woman right
Trump?
On camera.
Trump, yes, Trump. Trump knows how to respect.
The 1-2 respect.
Yeah.
But they are a bunch of pigs, though.
I wonder, like, who Bill Maher wouldn't go have dinner with. I bet you it would be, like, would he go have dinner with Nick Fuentes? Publicize
I'm sure
that?
He would.
You think he would?
Because he's taller.
Well,
than
he him. Mentioned Fuentes. he did mention Fuentes with Lara Trump.
He did? Wow.
Oh, yeah. He said that punk or whatever.
Your dad should really say more against him. And she's like, maybe he should.
That's going to be a good litmus test going
forward. Well, that's
forward.
Weird. He won't. Anybody who sits down with Fuentes is going to be, like, got to be the most desperate people in media. That's what it's going to be for relevance, because that's eventually happening. His normalization is already in progress.
From what I can tell, it doesn't necessarily help everything from certain people who recently sat down with Nick Fuentes and have their career sort of go up in flames.
Yeah.
Calling from a 724 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
This is me?
Yes, it's you.
Oh, wow. This is Nate from Pittsburgh.
Nate from Pittsburgh, what's on your mind?
Hey, I was just calling. I was watching an old interview that you did with David Graeber, and I thought that his understanding of debt and, you know, just the billionaire class in general would be good to brush up on for people. And the way that he talked about conservatives taking anti-bureaucracy and, you know, twisting it into restrictions, what is it called? Regulations?
Yeah, against regulations, sure.
And I just thought it would be a good thing for people to brush up on, and how like the lower classes have to always empathize with the billionaire class. And that's why there's so many people who think that they will be billionaires. And the billionaires are obviously thinking of everyone else as less than human, I would say. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good idea. You know, we have done some tagging. We got to start this project back up. We've done some tagging in our archives, and it should be easier for people to search these things. But that may be our next like little internal project, because I think we did I did at least two interviews with Graeber as early as like, I mean, 2012 or 13, I believe. And I did at least one or two, or at least two interviews, maybe three with Graeber. Really interesting stuff. But I appreciate the call.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Left is best. Love you guys.
Appreciate the call. Thank you. Let's do this Rod Dreher thing, because I found it really interesting. We have been saying forever on this program, and we're not obviously the only people who say this, but when you elect somebody to office, you are also, they are not just themselves.
Yeah.
If they're president, for instance, they bring in, you know, they have tens of thousands of appointees that they end up bringing into the government, and they all come from the constituencies that president represents. I'm just using the president, but this is true of the mayor. This is true of any executive branch, largely. And to the extent that you, when you elect lawmakers, they also have constituencies. Now, you know, it's not down to the person, but they are very conscious of who they have to keep within their coalition. Sometimes they're wrong. Sometimes they end up losing the 2024 election as to like what members of their coalition can they afford to lose, or what trade-offs do they need to make. And this is relevant because the way that people govern, very often, no, it's not one-to-one, very often they know they have to represent their constituencies. Here is Rod Dreher, the crunchy conservative. Do you remember this guy, Matt?
Yeah, like very strange guy.
Like a hippie libertarian, serious Catholic. I can't remember of his trajectories.
It goes deep.
There's some weird stuff there that's been weird over the years. But he's here he is. I really enjoy this because it's both a this is what like a humble brag is. Like, I know, I can't tell you, I know exactly what J.D. Vance's real beliefs are. I can't tell you exactly what he said, but I can tell you enough to make it seem like I am sort of an intimate with him.
There are a lot of people that claim to be friends with J.D. Vance.
But I think this is quite true, and we've seen examples of this, and it is good to hear it spelled out. This is Rod Dreher, on the Unheard podcast with Freddie Sayers.
This I went to see him in his house when I was in Washington.
Talking about J.D. Vance. Good.
I went to see him in his house when I was in Washington because I wanted to plead with him as a fellow Christian. He's a serious Catholic, and I'm an Orthodox Christian. I said, you got to say something. You can't let this guy get away with it. Now, I'm not going to say what his response was, but I will say that he hates Fuentes. It's clear. Fuentes has gone after his wife, Usha, who is of Indian descent. He's called her a Jeet and condemned J.D. as a race mixer. So J.D. has no love for Fuentes. But I think it's fair to say that J.D. does understand intuitively, because he's 41 years old, he understands the crisis that these young men are facing. He understands that they have been unfairly targeted by the woke left that have taken over all the institutions of American life and for the past 15 years or so. And I think he must be trying to figure out a way to speak to them in a positive way, to acknowledge their grievances, the legitimate ones, but to lead them away from this racist loony.
Okay. Now, incidentally, that's exactly the argument that Roberts made, who's the head of the Heritage Foundation, who is on the hot seat right now because of his video coming out. Understand, this is, one, it shows you that Vance is working hand-in-hand with Kevin Roberts at Heritage. All three of these guys, incidentally, are on some form or another Christian nationalists. And the idea that Vance is going to lead them away from Nick Fuentes, or that Kevin Roberts is going to lead these wayward men who have had to deal with, like, the anti-white discrimination.
Institutions captured by people that are okay with race mixing.
Exactly. And secularism or not, let's say, the religious imposed doctrine as the way to live their lives. The idea that they're going to lead them away is obviously just a story. It is their way of justifying kissing his ass so they get that constituency. But understand, you don't get that constituency and then just say, I'm going to walk away from it.
Right. And the leading away element would have to mean that there hasn't been progress from Fuentes's side in normalizing himself within the very institutions that are important within the Republican Party. You have the Heritage Foundation, but you also have shows like Tucker Carlson having him on and then saying, we're going to put differences aside here because I thought you were an op. No, I thought you were an op. And we'll come together on our shared Christian nationalism. Whatever the Republicans are doing, Vance included in this, is participating in normalizing him, not leading him away from anybody. And Nick Fuentes, I think really since the Charlie Kirk killing, by the way, where we still don't know fully what the motives were with the shooter. We don't it doesn't seem like he was a groiper in particular, but the groipers had been in the past targeting Charlie Kirk, and perhaps Fuentes is thinking like it easily could have been or something like that.
Well, also, he's gotten the red carpet treatment from all the media that yes. See him as a replacement for Charlie.
But he has an off-ramp, right? Like, we've talked about Fuentes getting into this Nazi crap when he was quite young, and how do you get out of that box into a more mainstream area? And he has been given the red carpet, as you say, Matt, to do that. Up to the vice president allowing a guy like this to insult his wife repeatedly and not say boo about it because they're more concerned with capturing that constituency. So the result is normalizing his ideas and normalizing what he's offering, not the other way around.
But it just gives you a notion of at least like what the internal thinking is and how Vance thinks he's going to appeal to the groipers. And who knows how big the groiper... I mean, that's the other thing, is that, like, you know, the idea that there are tens of millions of these disaffected, you know, young white men, I think is overblown. And in many respects, we're starting to see the polling. A lot of these people are just like, they're half out of touch with anything political, and now they just don't like Trump. They're certainly disaffected. But if you wanted to reach these people and wanted to cast them aside, wanted them to cast aside Nick Fuentes, why wouldn't you address them and also criticize Fuentes? Like, if that's the plan, right? If the plan is
right.
to sort of like go in, let's say, for instance, like we wanted to steal TYT's audience.
Just a theory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
want to steal their audience. we would go in and appeal we would have to start to appeal to people who, you know, like think there's a lot of crime or something, or
we might have to start screaming more.
Screaming more, but also
have to do a
appeal to
run.
Crime and, you know, injustice of what's happening in women's sports, which of course is a huge topic. And then but we'd also address those things. But say that, you know, TYT has sold out those constituencies.
Uh-huh.
And we're actually, you know, we're actually defending. Like, what is J.D. Vance is in no way doing anything to combat Fuentes. All he's doing and
is
the
throwing
rest
his
of them
wife
doing,
under the bus.
And like Kevin Roberts was basically saying, like, we're not going to shut these people out of the conversation.
But you don't get it. He's de-radicalizing all of these young men by allowing their favorite streamer to use a racial epithet against his wife and not saying anything about it. That's how you de-radicalize, is you lay over and you show your belly to the Nazi.
Or the other strategy you could have if you're J.D. Vance and you want to appeal to young people is to show you're cool and funny.
You fight charisma with charisma.
Yeah, you get up there and like, this is what I would do. Like, I want to go up there, I'm going to do something that's going to just, I'm going to show people I can be funny. Like, I have like this kind of like attitude of like, hey man, guess who's not going to not upset the apple cart? This guy. Check it out.
That is a uniquely American thing. That's why, for example, we have, you know, turkey. Think about turkey. Who really likes, be honest with yourselves, who really likes turkey?
Me.
You're all full of shit. Everybody who raised your hands. I know. Think about it. And here's how I know that every single one of you who raised your hand is lying to me. How many times do you roast an 18-pound turkey just randomly? Just, you know, a nice summer afternoon. We're going to go get
How often do you have 18 people over for dinner?
Yeah.
Nobody does it because turkey doesn't actually
hey,
taste that
cook.
Good. But on Thanksgiving, on the most American holiday, I got a fan over here. On the most American holiday,
a crowd work.
We are going to cook a turkey, by God, because that's what Americans do. We cook this gigantic American bird, and we do all kinds of crazy things to make it taste good. I talked to a soldier today.
Oh, my God.
Who she said she's going to deep fry a turkey, and I'm actually going to deep fry a turkey myself tomorrow. And
what?
Look, here's the thing. If you've got to deep fry something to make it taste good, it probably isn't that good.
But don't deep
pretty
fry
good
it.
Rule of thumb when it comes to food.
Oh my God, I can't.
No,
take
but
the rest
but
of
but
this.
I don't want to argue whether the turkey is tasty or not.
I do. Gravy, gravy, and turkey. Are you joking? Dark meat? What?
Well, but the idea, like, who's randomly roasting an 18-pound turkey? Well, you do that because there's a lot of people getting together. And I presume you also cook, like, if you're doing Christmas, you cook a bigger ham than you usually would. But the guy's not funny. He just he wanted to basically just go like, I'm a rebel, man.
Because Trump can riff. Trump can like riff and people respond to it. It's not much better, but it's like, oh, he's saying what comes into his mind.
This is exactly like
Trump.
I'm doing the weave like Trump did.
He made his
just
AIDS.
Say turkey. It just occurs to me like, who's really doing
I'm a wacky turkey. I got these
but
turkey opinions.
Here's the other thing that's just sort of like crazy. he's fallen into George W. Bush territory here.
Yes.
Does he realize it? Because he's going like, we don't like turkey. We just go and kill this American bird and then cook it because that's what it is to be an American. This is like George W. Bush going right. like, oh, this, look at that. She's got three jobs. Uniquely American.
Right.
Like, we're going to do
when
something.
When I think of American bird, I think of the bald eagle and anyway.
I'm just going to take my testicles and smash them with a hammer because I'm American. And that's what we do. Yeah, hurt? Yes, hurt hurts. But that's where we're American. I'm going to make a meal for 18 people that we know doesn't taste good. And we're doing it because that's what it is to be an American.
This guy, $100,000 in debt, doesn't even have a job. Uniquely American.
We're going to shove this down your throat, even though it doesn't taste good, because it's American.
Somebody who's bombed a lot in his life, I recognize he had a bomb trigger where he goes, I got a fan over here.
That guy over there.
He acknowledged
that guy gets it.
The one guy laughing.
This guy's with me, isn't he? He's with me.
I started to sweat when he did that because I was like PTSD.
Yeah, also you never got a turkey BLT turkey club.
That's the thing, is when I go to Katz's, which is not often because it's like $30 a sandwich, but it's the turkey sandwich.
They're huge. You can eat it for 3 days.
Right, that's true.
The other
but
thing.
I'm just picturing him making all his aides and staffers listen to him go over this bit and then like politely laughing. And he's like, oh, this is going to kill for the
this
troops. I
the
get the troops. I am a troop.
Now, here's the other thing. I don't know if you're picking up on this, but he is also in anticipation, because this is going to be a 2.5-year process. And I'm quite sure we're going to hear people talking about how he's code switching. But he is ramping up his hillbilly accent.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
And he really, that's where he fumbled a little bit. Like where he's like, he's still trying to figure it out, trying to get it more comfortable. Come on, man, you're full of shit, man. Turkey, you like turkey? Come on.
Oh, and back to also just the Fuentes thing. If you recall, there were leaked messages of J.D. Vance calling Trump Hitler back in, 2017, 2016, something like that. And instead of, working to de-radicalize all of the fans of the person who he referred to as Hitler, he ended up joining the presidential ticket. And now the administration is further right than ever. If we want a roadmap as to how effective J.D. Vance is at co-opting movements.
Hey, man, I'm tearing them down from the inside.
Or if you can't beat them, join them. We got a saying down the old dirt road.
My grandpappy once told me if you can't beat them, join them. He was the first one to ever say that.
Also, remember at TPUSA, he was like, I hope my wife becomes Christian.
Yeah,
he's just selling out to Fuentes hard.
But that's the it's Trump is Hitler, but he's going to co-opt the movement by joining it. Nick Fuentes is a Nazi. He's going to co-opt the movement by joining it. What's next? David Duke. I'm going to just bring them all in and de-radicalize them with the force of my charisma.
Hey, we got a big tent down at the county fair. We got room for everybody.
A big tent and it's a high top tent and there's a white tip at the very top of it.
Y'all saw that Usha Vance's spokesperson had to talk about why she didn't have a ring on her finger.
Well, why was that?
She's doing dishes, apparently, and forgot to put it back on.
Interesting. Right before a public event?
Usha Vance doesn't do dishes, so why the wedding ring? This is a salon piece. There's also a people piece. But Usha Vance's spokesperson addresses marriage ring rumors after she's spotted without ring during outing with Melania Trump.
At public outing with Melania Trump, who she would be normally hanging out with.
It's
just
probably okay, JD.
Girl boss, girling out with.
They probably didn't talk about anything.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there was. They wouldn't have complained.
I genuinely don't know what they have to talk about.
just shared abuse.
Yeah, fair, yeah. Fair. But I just feel like Melania is more of the blank stare kind of chick.
You have to. She's like the person that puts a bag of chips on her head. Yeah.
Final call of the day. Calling from a 256 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, is this me?
Yes, it is you. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Julio. I'm calling from, unfortunately, Alabama.
Julio from Alabama. What's on your mind?
Oh, man, yeah, like, this has been a great show. I mean, I've just been listening the entire time. There's so many topics I'd love to pick, but I think I want to zero in on the whole, what was Emma talking about earlier with the whole, I think it was something regarding, like, ICE. Like, you know, because I don't know if you could tell by the name, obviously. It has some sort of personal affection to me, or, like, it's a little bit more meaningful to me.
Yeah.
Even though I was born here. And, you know, most people around here wouldn't accept that, though, because they're just like, where are you from? And the hidden question behind that is, are you here legally? You know?
Right.
It's one of those things. But, God, I've just been listening and laughing to some of these jokes that Matt and all these other guys have been saying the entire time. So, I mean, I'm just trying to think of, like, what we have in particular that, like, I guess my biggest question right now is, do you really think that the Democrats aren't really going to mess this up in the midterms? Like, with the Republicans, the Republicans are really screwing everything up, and we just need to let this car crash kind of just, you know, do its thing, you know? We're just kind of standing over here at the intersection, and it just smacks straight into the stoplight. And, you know, now it's catching on fire, and then people are running out and everywhere, and it just, you know, I don't really know where to go from there. Like, are they going to really mess this up, or are we going to have an actual chance to flip something around and actually have some sort of change, you know?
Well, I think those two things are not mutually exclusive. Like, I think the Democrats can not take advantage of this moment and do things incorrectly, and still people would be so mad at Republicans that maybe the House will flip. But the problem is that when Democrats go in without any type of agenda, when they get in office, they have no agenda. And, you know, or their agenda is insufficient to meet the moment. And then we're back here again in, I don't know, 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, that type of thing. I mean, that's the real problem, is that at one point the Democrats, they need to be as aggressive as Trump, but in doing things that are going to help people and more people.
I think the thing that I'm looking at right now is just that there's this lack of, you know, like you said, there's this lack of message behind just anti-Trump. And I hate to ever side with like freaking Bill Maher on any of that shit. But, you know, like the only thing that I could say that he has a valid point is that Democrats have no actual solid message besides anti-Trump. And I feel like progressives have always had a message beyond that, you know, with Mamdani getting elected. And, you know, as someone who is over here in Alabama, where it feels just hopeless because everyone here wants, you know, Christian nationalism and brown people bad and all sorts of other stuff like this, you know, it's just, it's disheartening to, you know, see that. But like, I love seeing, you know, progress made in other places. It's just that I highly doubt that would ever come into a place like this.
It's going to be interesting. Doug Jones is running. It looks like Doug Jones is going to run for governor there. I mean, I know, you know, hard to imagine that.
That was the first election I ever, voted in, because I was, I'm 26 now, but in 2018, that was the first election I voted in. I was so happy to, you know, to do my research behind it. And it's like, why would we vote for, I believe it was that Moore guy at the time, who was a Republican, who got banned from a mall.
Yeah.
He got banned from a mall for, you know, doing things and, and like Doug Jones, who was a civil rights prosecutor, the law, like the party of law and order, wouldn't elect a prosecutor, but would choose to elect a child predator. And apparently another one's in office right now, but you know, that's neither here nor there. I mean, like, it's just the amount of disappointment that I've just always felt coming from this area. It's like, I don't really know where to turn to on that. I mean, I'm just looking to move out the second I can, but you know, it just feels like what kind of message could you ever bring to a more moderate approach like this? And I know that we hate the moderate kind of like ideal for this, but I feel like that's the way.
If Alabama, was moderate, I think the rest of the country would be good. I mean, you know, because it's all about like sort of like, you know, moving the parameters. And so if we got Alabama to moderate, I think that would be a good indication that things are much better in other places. Well, hang in there, Julio. I appreciate the call. I wish I had something more hopeful to tell you about Alabama, but the rest of the country will be here when you're ready.
Oh, yeah, no. I'm definitely going to just jump as soon as I can, man.
Appreciate the call. Hang in there.
Appreciate it. Bye. You guys, so take care.
Folks, that ends the call-in portion of the program for today. Andrew Cuomo says, what was old is new again. Oh, we're going to have to get the Andrew Cuomo clip tomorrow. Do we have that on the list?
Yeah. Him not taking accountability?
You know, I thought it would be upset about losing the mayoral race to a member of Hamas. But the weather is pretty great down here in Florida. It reminds me of Israel. I might get older, but these waitresses will always be in that prime groping age. Merry Christmas, losers. I won.
It would be great to have rich people bankroll your summer of publicity, and then you know that you're not going to win, so you can just retire to, yeah, sunny Florida.
Crime, crime, one time. Do you think Bill Maher would have dinner with you, Sam, or too much of a woke lib for him? No, he would not have me on his program.
I don't mean this in a mean way, but I don't think you're famous enough for him to want to have dinner
with you. No, I don't take that.
I think he only cares about that.
Yes. Muddy Mo. Last week, my friend who is not deep into politics, knows more than the average person, but not deep, brought up Pelosi by name because of that out-of-touch ice cream moment. That moment was years ago. Americans have remembered that while suffering this economy. I mean, it was pretty striking.
Yeah. And she's now really, I think, synonymous with insider trading.
I mean, the truth is, like, the COVID, when people had to be locked in their homes, people had different types of homes that they had to be locked in.
When I was going on all those shows, when I was out west, I was looking up some statistics I could rattle off. There was London School of Economics had this thing. The top 12 billionaires in the U.S., increased their wealth by 190% from 2020 to 2024.
And we don't have any more extra money. Like,
isn't that insane? But like that, the idea that those implications aren't directly connected to what people are experiencing right now.
No, it's the immigrants and trans people.
Yeah, apparently.
Former libertarian. They did not put Nick Fuentes on the list. That is so...
They put Tucker on it.
Who is they, though? Who's stopantisemitism.org? Like, it has less credibility than even the ADL. I don't even think it's like sub-ADL.
The Milrein. The most similar thing between Nixon and Trump is their shared capacity to take a personal grievance further than what would be considered normal behavior in each having been or is the president. Yeah. Space Lenin. Hey, I'm a teacher and a union rep, homesick. I'd love to talk in your education stories and talk about how our state union has been infiltrated by a MAGA podcaster. Oh, wow. It's publishing videos from our meetings. Oy. Biden, my time. Don't be mean to Eric Adams. He thinks the city has been to the New York of that nation. I'm not sure I follow that, but I get the point. Like a Luca, Harry Enten should host real housewives reunions.
He would be good at that, actually.
Caribou, no one has ever talked about an MRI 3 weeks afterwards unless there was something wrong found. That's true.
Yeah, it's usually like that. You're like, hey, did you ever hear about that MRI? It's like, oh, yeah, nothing. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
I got a clean bill of health for my thing that the MRI looked at.
Give me an A+.
Carrie Bars, I can't believe folks would disrespect Bill Franklin by talking so much shit about Turkey. What's next? Telling me to go on a multi-year hooker and drug bender in France is bad for my health?
I think Ben Franklin.
Oh, well, it says Bill.
Okay. He wanted the bird to be the turkey instead of the eagle, the American
bird.
Oh,
really?
Yeah, that was Franklin's thing.
He wanted the bird to be the turkey.
Yeah,
the national bird.
Which would I would have been maybe like made of us like 0.5% less fascist.
Maybe.
Having a silly logo.
One that doesn't quite fly very well.
Yeah, big fat bird.
Right.
Weird thing off its face.
I think they made the right move with the bald eagle.
I don't know. I prefer the turkey.
All right.
Five more. Chicago socialist. The idea that federal government cannot vet thousands of people is wild. Someone needs to visit JFK International once or twice.
italics. Doge literally cut funding from these SIVs, the SIVs. The Trump refugees resettlement pause, Afghan allies, was Doge. Yes, of course. All right, four more. Providence bigger than Worcester. Providence is bigger than Worcester? No, it's not. No, it's not.
It's not.
It's never been.
It just isn't.
It isn't. Look at the census. Freaking get out of here.
Yeah, grow up.
I'm going to read you. Fuck.
Twerp.
It's called defamation.
Wait, maybe they're using different metrics than population size. Maybe they're using landmass.
Or just
square mileage.
Loser per capita.
What's in Providence?
Like take the L.
Are you being a bigot?
Providence is bigger than hippies. Worcester.
Yeah. Oh, there is there.
Oh, sorry, with your RIT or whatever it is.
RISD.
RISD. Yeah.
Looks like the r/Worcester Reddit has a pretty active thread on this exact question.
I have no dog in the fight, but...
Okay, first
Providence
off,
doesn't pay my checks.
Worcester has a much bigger population, but also... it has, for being on a non-navigable waterway, it blows Providence away.
And that's the metric that matters
wait,
the most.
Wait, Forbean, isn't it? Providence is on a navigable waterway.
Yeah, Worcester's not.
That's a point for Providence.
Worcester's on a non-navigable waterway, pound for pound, much bigger.
Oh, you're saying despite not having a navigable waterway.
Well, the problem is that the Blackstone Canal, which runs through the middle of Providence, was paved over in Worcester. Worcester used to have a port.
Providence, easily the food alone blows Worcester out of the water for sit-down restaurants.
Oh, get the F out of here, dude.
Are
you serious?
I'm just reading the Reddit. I don't have any. I will say
that's probably true.
Yeah, it's like it's like a location people go to for vacation, and no one goes to Worcester for vacation. just to throw that out there.
First off, well, I don't even know how to respond to that.
We don't want your tourism.
You're not allowed to come. Worcester for Worcester. Worcesterites only.
Job market apparently better for Worcester.
Oh, yeah.
Right. That would make sense.
No, there's some fancy restaurants there because it's the state capital in Providence. But and Worcester, to be fair, was the only place, I think, in the history of legal seafood that the restaurant could not support itself in Worcester.
I'm worried that this is going to turn into like the great math debates of 2017 that we had.
What's that train car diner in Worcester that has all the Red Sox menu? I love that place.
Sounds hot, fancy.
It's got Red Sox logos all over its
menu.
Does
it have a Michelin star?
The Nomar omelet?
No, well, it's literally on Michelin tires. I think it's like
it's
a trailer.
It's not the Miss Worcester Diner. There's another one that's down near Polar Park.
That's such a great line. It does have a Michelin star, but it does have Michelin
tires. It's on four Michelins.
Providence people just are pissed because of the Paw Sox. That's all. Sorry.
Oh, that's right.
Yep. Oh, I'm sorry. Is that still a sensitive topic?
You want to keep going?
The Crowder Lion. Trump stands weird to offset the weight of the tumor growing in his stomach so he doesn't topple over like a weeble wobble. All right. XL from Canada. Thank you, America, for managing to fix Canadian politics twice, once electing Trump and then electing Zohran. And let's see, anonymous, COVID taught us a lesson that people with mansions with personal gyms and pools and jacuzzis with fully stocked fridges still had a hole in their existence so great they still needed society to be open to live their shallow lives. Looking at you, Joe Rogan. I think it was really more about that's how they made their money. And the final I am of the day... comes from Andre Sparks
Lespa. Forget deep fried turkey. Eat KFC. Matt, Brian, Emma, great job today, folks. See you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. I guess somewhere the choice is made. The option where you don't get paid for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive.